Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is your Tech Guy Podcast. This is episode 1599, recorded Sunday, June 9th, 2019. Enjoy. The Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite, the premier data protection platform for business, with customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. To learn more, visit Carbonite.com. And by DigitalOcean, deploy and scale your apps seamlessly on the simplest cloud platform. Join over 150,000 businesses that use DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $50 credit at do.co/twit. And by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, it's time once again to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and, you know, smartphones and smart watches, augmented reality, Macintosh, Windows, Linux, $1,000 monitor stands, all that jazz, anything with a chip in it. Although I guess the monitor stands don't have any chips in them, but nevertheless, we can talk about them. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach us. All you have to do is use Skype out, and that shouldn't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number in the U.S., 888-827-5536. If you hear something on the show and you say, I want to write that down and remember that, don't worry, you don't have to, because we write it down for you and stuff it into a website called techguylabs.com. And here's the good part. It's free. You don't have to sign up for it. You just wander in anytime you want, and you'll find it all there. There's even a pretty good search engine, you know, so you can find stuff from past shows. And there are a lot of past shows. This is episode 1599. Remind me next week, episode 1600. We're finally entering the Age of Enlightenment. It's taken us that long. But all those shows are available, audio and video, actually, on the website, as well as the text. And your comments are also welcome. We like to have those. And there's no sign-up, no fee. FedEx has said and announced on Friday that it's ending express shipping service for Amazon. When's the last time FedEx delivered something to you from Amazon? More and more, right? It's these new Amazon Prime delivery vans, at least in my area. We're in the San Francisco Bay Area, so maybe that's more common here. If you read the Everything Store, a wonderful history of Amazon, unauthorized, I might add, history of Amazon. In fact, Jeff Bezos' ex, Mackenzie Bezos, famously wrote a horrific review of it on Amazon, even though, in my opinion, it was quite accurate and quite well written. She didn't like it. But one of the things they talk about in there is the stare down between FedEx, Amazon, and UPS. FedEx said, we're going to raise your rates. We're going to make you pay something a little bit closer to what everybody else is paying. And Amazon said, over our dead body. Well, not quite. And FedEx backed down, UPS backed down. But in the years intervening, Amazon has purchased, or leased, I guess, because nobody buys, everybody leases their own fleet of jet planes. They've created distribution centers all over the country and Amazon Prime delivery. So, yeah, I wonder, you know, can FedEx survive without Amazon? We know Amazon can survive without FedEx. What I think has happened, and get ready because this is going to happen more and more, is battle lines have been drawn between Amazon and everybody else. FedEx is serving Walmart and Target and Walgreens. In fact, Walmart has become a particularly large FedEx customer. So it's almost as if they're choosing, these companies are choosing sides. As consumers, do we choose sides? I notice I do something which is really probably not the best thing in the world, but I notice that I'm reluctant. The other day, I was going to buy some breakfast cereal online. That by itself should tell you something. When did it become preferable to buy breakfast cereal online than pick it up at the grocery store? I don't know. Anyway, I was about to buy some breakfast cereal, but then I noticed, oh, rats, I have to buy it on their site. It's special breakfast cereal. It's really, really good breakfast cereal, I guess. I don't know. I'll let you know. Spoonwell, I think it was called. And I thought, oh, no. I could tell in my brain, the reaction was, oh, no. It's not Spoonwell. What is it called? Spoon something. Spoon something. Spoon cereal. Anyway, I didn't want to buy it on their site. Magic Spoon. That's it. Magic Spoon. It's a startup. Of course it is. Anyway, I don't want to buy it on their site. In fact, I went to Amazon. Can I buy it on Amazon's site? No, you have to buy it from Magic Spoon. I was very relieved, by the way, when Magic Spoon gave me the option to buy it through Amazon. So Amazon does get its cut of Magic Spoon. But fascinating. I thought my reaction, I found my reaction interesting because I am now so conditioned to buy on Amazon. And it's not about price. It's about, what is it about? Convenience? Yeah, because it's got that one-click ordering. That's nice. They already have my credit card and address. I just go to the site, find the item, push the button. I don't really even price check anymore. I probably should. If it's really expensive, I will, but I probably should. There are little Chrome extensions and things like Camel that you can run. I think Honey is another one that will check and see if you're getting a deal on Amazon, which is probably a good idea to do that automatically. But they are really dominant. And I think probably if I were a smart person, I would be throwing some of my business elsewhere. You don't want a monopoly because what happens? They become the company store. Oh, isn't that? In fact, I think that might be the name of a book about them. They become the company store, and you know the deal with you remember that, was it Tennessee Ernie Ford song? Oh, my soul to the company store. The idea was these miners were not paid in cash; they were paid in scrip. Script that was only usable at the company store. So the company had them coming and going. They'd pay them, but they'd also get all the coal and all the pay because they'd have to buy it through the company store, and presumably they weren't getting the best prices. Amazon's become that, haven't they? Even though I'm still using greenbacks, American money, so I could go somewhere else. They've psychologically, and the thing is, if they become the only place, then they can do anything they want with prices. They already are. Amazon pricing is a weird and interesting thing. Just read an article about, have you noticed on Amazon lately they have Amazon's Choice? When you search for something generic, if you search for it by brand name, usually you'll find it. But if you just search for, you know, I want Band-Aids, I guess that is it. That's actually a company name. But if you search, probably works with them, or say bandages, Amazon will make a recommendation for Amazon's Choice. But interestingly, it isn't the lowest price. It isn't even the best. Like everything else in our life these days, it's algorithmically chosen. They choose it algorithmically. Wired magazine had an article. What does Amazon's Choice actually mean this week? And the truth is, there really is no actual answer. It's magical. Amazon understands that you don't want choice. Amazon's Choice. You don't want choice. They call it, in fact, psychologists call it choice overload. Sometimes people don't buy at all because there's too many choices. So Amazon, which has a lot of choices, tackles that problem by putting a little black flag on certain items when you search for them that say Amazon's Choice. It's not the best selling. It always, sometimes it is. It's not the highest ratings. Sometimes it isn't always. The company says, quote, the award is given to highly rated, well-priced products available to ship immediately. But how do you choose within that group? Amazon won't say. This is what they say, an Amazon spokesperson told Wired. Amazon's choice is just our recommendation. And customers can always ask for specific brands or products if they choose. You don't have to buy Amazon's choice any more than you have to use Amazon. But the psychology, there's a term that lately I've been seeing a lot computer geeks use called dark patterns. Oh, that sounds scary. Once you start seeing them, you'll see them everywhere. Dark patterns are like the magician's force. You know, when they do card tricks and they kind of force you to take a card that they already want you to take, they know about. It's a geek force where even though you don't feel compelled, you just naturally are going to choose Amazon and naturally going to choose Amazon's choice. And dark patterns do it, and we see them everywhere now if you look for them. There's all sorts of techniques. Now, again, this is back to the algorithm. The algorithm is what's causing YouTube to have problems these days because the recommendation algorithm tends to bring you deeper and deeper into weirdness, right? Have you noticed that? You watch a video on cooking and then it'll promote a video on vegetarianism, then it'll promote a video on veganism, then it'll promote a video from PETA, then it'll pretty soon, you're doing as some people did in our little town the other day, breaking into chicken farms and liberating the chickens. All because of YouTube. 8888 Ask Leah, the world we're living in. I feel like now I'm more and more, this is our job here, is to watch, to observe, and to report on what we see, on the dark patterns all around us. Let's talk about that or anything on your mind. I know your printer's not working. That's all you really care about. 8888 Ask Leo. You can ask me about that too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do you think I got to look into this dark pattern. Maybe I could use dark patterns on this show. Keep you listening. Stay tuned. All the time, it's called a tease.
All right, if I look good.
Yeah, all is well. Let me look up. I need the definition of dark patterns. That's an interesting term, isn't it? It's a scary term. Darkpatterns.org is a website. Wikipedia says, a dark pattern is a user interface that has been carefully crafted to trick users into doing things such as buying insurance with their purchase or signing up for recurring bills. Darkpatterns.org has a hall of shame. It's actually probably a good thing to educate people to dark patterns and what they are and become aware of them. Should we watch the dark patterns video and learn? Let's watch and learn together.
Dark patterns are features of interface design crafted to trick users into doing things that they might not want to do, but which benefit the business in question. Here's an example. Have you ever tried to delete your Amazon account? Here's the Amazon homepage.
Good luck.
What's the first thing you might think to do? The obvious place to look is the account dropdown here. Once you're in here, you look around. It's a lot of information, but if I'm interested in deleting my account, I think that your account is probably a good place to go. Once I'm on this page, there's a lot more information. Payment options, login and security, and a bunch of stuff down here. Unfortunately, you could click every link on your account page, but none would deliver you to a place where you could actually delete it, because it's not here. In order to actually delete your Amazon account...
Well, let's save that for later. If you want to know how to delete your Amazon account, stay tuned. Unbreakable. There she is, ladies and gentlemen, taking your calls in a specially soundproof booth. Kimmy Schaffer. Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer.
I don't know. I kind of have a feeling if I screamed loud enough, you'd hear me.
Really? Try it. No. No, you're in a, you know, we're in a professionally designed studio where sounds are blocked out in theory.
I'm kind of a loud mouth, though.
Are you loud?
Not as I can be.
No, there's louder people in this building.
Oh, there are.
Yes. Yeah. You're not the loudest here. So Kim comes in early. She puts on a little baker's outfit, little apron, little baker's hat.
Make you some cookies.
Yeah, she gets, well.
That you won't eat.
She's slaving. I can't eat them because they're not keto, but she's slaving over a hot phone to produce Little Biscuits of Wonder, also known as you, our callers.
Biscuits, fluffy biscuits of wonder.
Who, which little scone of surprise should I bite into today?
How about the actual person who knows how to cook? Rich, our old chef guy in Sonoma.
Old chef guy.
Old chef guy.
Channeling Rich's chef recipes. Thank you, Kim.
There you go.
Hello, Richard. Old chef guy.
Yeah, that's me. I am so not a little biscuit. I'm more like a sheet pan of biscuits. That's more my style.
What's your favorite biscuit recipe?
My favorite recipe actually is made by an old friend of mine who measures by hand and doesn't measure anything, and she makes the most perfect flaky biscuits ever. And I have made thousands of biscuits, and this woman still today will just throw things in a bowl, what looks to be throwing things in a bowl, and make perfect flaky biscuits.
I feel there's a secret to biscuits, to baking in general, but to biscuits specifically, because every time I try to make biscuits, they're sinkers, they're lead, you know, weights. And one thing I read was you need soft wheat flour. You can only get in the Deep South. I don't know. Maybe she has a secret recipe for soft wheat flour. I don't know.
I think it's more about people tend to overwork the dough.
Yeah.
It's not a bread. You don't want to develop the gluten.
No, that's right.
Bread, in order to rise, you want to develop the gluten, so you're stretching and rolling.
That's
whereas
right.
biscuits, you really just want to get to the point of where it looks. You look at the bowl and you think, this is a mess.
And you it's just too wet. I can't work
moment.
It.
It's too something, and you take it just to the next moment, and then suddenly you have perfect biscuits.
Well, I bet you many of the people tuning into this show did not expect to get biscuit tips from Old Chef Guy, but they did. And I can only look on because I'm not allowed biscuits on my ketogenic diet. I can only look on and with wonder and awe. What can I do for you, Richard?
My question is, I went to formulate this question, I pulled out my old Google G1.
Oh, I got one of those. That's in my museum. That's how old that is.
And it always makes me chuckle. I can't throw it away because it just is so amusing that it still boots. And it had one of my favorite keyboards.
You know, it's an interesting. It was the first Android phone. It has one of those slide-out keyboards. But what's interesting, it was prescient in its design because it has no headphone jack. It's so old that no one listened to music on their phones back then, I guess.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
And so now, having gone through from the G1 through every Pixel phone there is, all the Nexi, everything, I'm at a point where I love my Pixel 2 XL.
Yeah, great
phone. I love
the
camera. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I want, insert words that I cannot use, I want an SD card. I don't want to have to manage my storage anymore.
Google doesn't offer those, and there's you know, maybe some good reason for it. SD cards are notoriously difficult. Not just in Android. Microsoft had trouble with SD cards in its Windows phone, and you may remember in the one of the early testing versions of 1903, it wouldn't install if you had an SD card inserted in your computer. The reason is memory that can be removed is hard. It's hard for an operating system to put stuff there. It says, well, I can't guarantee it's always going to be there. And Google's tried all sorts of solutions. They have something they call adopted storage and on and on and on. I don't think Google, well, never say never. I doubt Google will put SD cards in Pixel phones to come. But I'll tell you who's doing it, and frankly, I think their phones are actually better. It's Samsung. And really? I think the Samsung S10, whether you get the relatively inexpensive E or the S10 or S10 Plus, I use an S10 Plus, is easily the best Android choice out there. Now, admittedly, Samsung modifies Android somewhat. In some cases, it's better. For instance, they have adaptive sound that I use all the time. You do a little hearing test with the phone and your preferred headphones, and from then on, it will make sure all the sound has your particular hearing curve built into it, which I find remarkable.
Wow.
And that's not an Android thing. But then they also do some weird things with the UI. The good thing about Android is you can use third-party launchers. I use Active Launcher, and it makes it exactly as I've customized the heck out of it. But it also allows you to put in SD cards. They handles it very well. I put my music, my photos, my videos, media is what I put on there, audiobooks. And it's, I agree with you. It's a nice thing to have, especially because I could take it with me next time, put it in the next phone, and almost always it will be recognized because the format's the same. So I would not hesitate to recommend Samsung if you really want an SD card. They're pricey, but I think they make the best Android phones out there. And they're the equivalent of a great, light, fluffy biscuit. Thank you, old chef guy, Leo Laporte, the old tech guy. Yeah, I mean, there are other companies that make them, but I have to say at this point, Android is Google, Samsung, and everybody else.
And do you think that the camera, are you as happy with the S10 Plus camera or the S10 or the Samsung camera as you were with the Pixel camera?
Yeah, so I still have a Pixel 3 XL. The only place the Pixel's better is in dark mode. And by the way, Samsung has been, with every update, improving their phone. But in many ways, the Samsung, if you get the S10 Plus, is better because it has three lenses. It has a close-up, medium, and wide, very wide lens.
Wow.
And I actually prefer the camera on the S10.
Wow.
So you're not, I think it's a better, it, you know, the Pixel has had all sorts of trouble with memory management. The battery life on the Samsung is remarkable. I have no hesitation in recommending the Galaxies, to be honest with you. The Note will be coming out fairly soon. I went crazy. I bought the overpriced, the top of the line, terabyte storage.
Ooh. Ouch.
S10 Plus.
Ouch.
With the ceramic back. Well, you know, for review purposes, we had...
Yes.
Right? You understand. You know me so well, Rich. For review purposes.
Sure,
but I have to say...
I love that. I wish I had that in my life.
I know.
For review purposes. Yeah, honey. No, I need this extra knife.
For
Come
review
on,
purposes. Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I have the nicest knife bindle. Sometime we'll compare knives, but I rarely use it because they're too good. I just use, if I'm chopping celery, I'm not going to bring out my special knife, but
no,
I have
but
it.
Once you've cut with that, but once
I
you've
know,
cut
it
with
spoils
that
you.
Special knife, you'll never go back because how it goes through an onion or how it chops a green onion or how it chops something, once you have that feeler, slice a tomato, you can't go back.
Well, you know what I did because I read Bourdain. I got a Global.
Oh, wow. Oof.
Well,
wow.
They're not huge. They're not horribly expensive. They're actually, but they're nice. They're really sharp. And I bought a Whetstone and, you know, I mean, I have a nice knife bindle. I even got a little bindle for it. And, but I'm so hesitant to bring it out because it's like, I have to get over that, obviously.
Well, if you want a really beautiful, I still have my original from the 70s, my original knives, which were all Wusthof, and I have a carbon steel knife. In other words, it's not resistant to rust.
That's all I buy. All I will buy is carbon.
Okay.
Because I want them soft.
Once you've done that, they're so sharp. They're so wonderful.
No, exactly.
Nobody else can ever use them.
No, because they're for your, and I use a, you know, what do you call it? The stone that you,
a whetstone.
It's not, I have a whetstone, but I also would, every time you use it, you strop it.
Oh, you brought, right, you, oh, you mean like a steel?
Yeah, steel. I have a knife steel, too.
Yeah.
Because you want to get all the, but on a soft carbon steel,
burrs,
you want a oh, man, that is such a nice knife. It is, and I think they're safer because you really, you don't apply as much force. You have more control. They really are fine. I love it.
Yes.
And those Wusshofs were great. Favorite. Those were great knives.
Yes.
Yeah, classics.
They were great knives.
Yep.
I still have that set.
Yep.
And my last comment is, I'm wondering what Max Headroom would think of dark patterns. I wonder Max come back and
he invented them, didn't he?
He would think about that. Yes,
man.
He did.
I got to talk some more about this. This is my new kick. And darkpatterns.org, I started playing that video. I'll play it when I have a lot more time. It's really interesting. It's really interesting. When you start seeing them everywhere, and what you realize is how algorithmically controlled we are at all times. Not just Facebook, Amazon, everybody. Algorithmically optimizing for engagement and profit. And we're just little guinea pigs. And it scares the hell out of me. I don't have bright, high hopes for our republic, to be honest.
Well, no, I think it's actually the other way. I think it's algorithmically set for profit, then engagement.
Yeah, whichever you need. Hey, I got to run, Rich. Great to talk to you again.
Okay, thank you.
See you later.
Okay.
Bring your knives next
thank
time you,
you
visit. Sam Abulsamid is the car guy, principal researcher at Navigant Research. He joins us every week to talk about the new technology of automobiles. Do you watch the? Are you going to watch the F1 race after you get off here?
I'm not so much into F1. I've gotten kind of bored with Formula One over the last 10 years, and I haven't really watched it for a while.
Okay.
I'm more into sports car racing, so I will be next weekend. I will be watching the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
That'll be great. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Now I was talking yesterday about the new Mac Pro and how expensive it is, and the $1,000 Mac stand and all that for your monitor, and
the Mac Pro itself, I can understand the price. $1,000 for that stand, Apple saying yes,
we can do this
because you guys are gonna buy it.
But here's what I likened it to. I likened it to the Ford GT. I think Apple said to its engineers, look, price is no object. Design the best computer you can. There are people who will buy this, who need it, who want it. It will show our engineering abilities, our ability to truly create something wonderful. And don't worry about the price tag. And just like the Ford GT, which starts at $450,000. No, you know, that's not Ford's bread and butter by any means.
But they're only building about 1,000 of them in total over about four years.
That may be all the Mac Pros Apple builds. It's not the point.
That may be true.
Yeah. So they made a mistake. They should never have told anybody what that stand costs.
Especially not during the keynote. Should have just, you know, that should have been one of those things as you're doing your order. It's like, oh, would you like a stand? Oh, here you go.
But
another $999. And it just kind of shows up on the bottom line.
You already said minimum 6,000 for the computer, 5,000 for the monitor. Minimum, that's 11,000. It's less than 10% for the stand. Might as well throw that in. But they should never have told anybody.
Or just charge 6,000 for the monitor and throw in the stand.
Yeah, they could have done that.
Nickel and dime people like that.
And I think what people are pointing out again and again is this monitor competes with $40,000 monitors. And that's the real point, is that, in fact, it's whoever's buying this is going to be happy to pay $6,000. It's a deal. But let's talk about cars. What are all those vehicles behind you? It looks like you're in a traffic jam today.
That's where I spent a good portion of the past week. I was my wife and I spent a few days in Manhattan. I was there to speak at a UBS Global Industrials and Transportation Conference. And I took my wife with me, so we took a few days off. And I didn't do any driving while I was in Manhattan.
You'd be nuts to drive in Manhattan.
Exactly. In fact, we even used the opportunity to use the subway a few times, which was great. What I wanted to kind of touch on a little bit was kind of continuing on from what you were talking about in your opening of the show today, of the idea of the company store, and one of the things in Manhattan. This is the kind of environment that a lot of people have talked about as being a prime application for autonomous vehicles. And, but if you look back a few years when Uber, for example, first started talking about, launching their autonomous vehicles program, Travis Kalanick was talking about, we've got to get our vehicles out there as quickly as possible. We've got to capture the market and, dominate the market. And so, an environment like this, would be a prime place for a company like Uber to dominate the market. But that would actually be a terrible thing in so many ways for that to happen, because in any city, to have any one company dominate with one technology for transportation would be terrible. First of all, just having a monopoly is generally a bad thing from an economic perspective, because now they're going to have the opportunity to raise prices, which arguably, in the ride-hailing market, you probably need to do anyway because it's a money-losing business. But there's a lot of good technical reasons why it would be terrible to have a monoculture, especially in a place like New York, of transportation technology. Because imagine, you often talk about security on this show, mm-hmm. and cybersecurity for vehicles is becoming much more of an issue, something that everybody is much more aware of in the industry. And if bad actors were to find a way to infiltrate the systems of an autonomous vehicle fleet, get into through the network that manages the fleet.
Oh my God! Imagine.
Can you imagine in a place like New York? To have half a million vehicles, that are autonomous, that are all in the same fleet. If somebody found a vulnerability and just suddenly commanded them to all turn left now, that would be a terrible thing.
It's going to happen.
It probably will. But
I just see that in our future. It's something that's going to happen.
There's a good chance that something like that will eventually happen, which is why it's important to have, just as in nature, it's a good thing to have some diversity in your transportation fleet. You want to have at least several different companies that are involved using different technologies. And also, again, going back to the example of New York, you don't want just autonomous cars driving around, because there are so many vehicles already. You need to have a diverse mobility ecosystem. So you need a variety of different types of vehicles for different use cases. I mean, you're going to have delivery vehicles. And, Elon Musk has been talking a lot lately about, denigrating the idea of mass transit, and promoting his boring company ideas, which I think is stupid for moving people. I think mass transit, it would be better to invest in actually improving the mass transit. I mean, like I said, we rode the subway several times this week, and it actually worked really well. There are issues with it, of course, but that's something that, investing in more upkeep and maintenance of the system would be better. But where something like what Musk has been talking about might actually be useful is having some tunnels and having automated vehicles for all the delivery vehicles. This picture over my shoulder, you can see all the trucks.
It's crazy.
There's all these trucks around New York, delivering to all these buildings and all these businesses. If we had something underground and get those trucks off the street and then had more reasonable sized vehicles on the road, using the roads to move people around, that would make a lot more sense in an urban environment.
This is the problem, is that it's all grown like Topsy. It's not planned. Even cities that are planned, New York has a very kind of sensible grid structure with avenues and streets. It's still, crazy. And then you go to a city like Boston that was less planned, and you can't drive at all.
To get from our hotel, we took a lift to get from our hotel to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It was about altogether a little under 2 mile trip, and it took over half an hour.
Yeah,
to do that,
it takes half an hour to get anywhere in New York.
Unless you're on foot, you can oftentimes do it faster on foot
or
than
bicycle.
You
get
car.
A city bike, or actually, I love the subway.
And
that's why mass transit is an interesting idea. There were some complaints in New York that the reason there's congestion in New York is Uber. There's so many of these rideshare vehicles on the street.
There's an estimated 100,000 Uber and Lyft vehicles on the streets of New York.
That's a lot of vehicles.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that makes it very congested. Yeah. Well, Sam, always a pleasure to talk to you. He is a principal researcher at Navigant Research, our car guy, my car guy, because whenever I need car advice, Sam's the man. And he joins us every week at this time. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Leo.
Have a great week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls after this. I have to say, we got to at some point write about this crazy Elon Musk tunneling idea.
Yeah, I've been debating what to write about that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, well, when you decide, let me know.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Well, I like a week or so ago, I like how SF Bart responded to him on Twitter. You know,
they say? Actually put some. It's like you invented the subway, dude.
They put up an infographic, you know, of the Transbay Tunnel and talked about, you know, the fact that, you know, that train going under the Transbay Tunnel transports 28,000 passengers per hour at peak periods, you know, versus the Bay Bridge is about half that.
Right. Yeah. And an Elon Musk boring tunnel would be one Tesla every minute.
Yeah. Or, well, you know, he was talking about, you know, how it takes, you know, the average speed of New York subways is 17 miles an hour. You know, and the island of Manhattan is only 13 miles long. Well, the reason why the average speed is so low is because they have to stop all the time. You know, he was talking about, you know, his pods going through there, you know, every second at 155 miles an hour. That makes no sense.
No.
No, you know, not in that kind of space. No. It's crazy.
It's cray cray. Yeah. Oh well. But
speaking of biscuits, though.
My
wife and I popped over. Yeah, there it is. That's the graphic.
Our show today, brought to you by Carbonite. Carbonite supports not only the radio show, but I'm very happy to say supports the podcast. Carbonite, as you well know by now, if you've been listening at all, is the data protection platform for business. Businesses have different needs than you and me. Certainly, backup's important for us. For a business, it's life or death. A business taken down by ransomware is out of business. And if it goes on long enough, the losses mount up. You could literally be bankrupt. You got to protect your data, and you got to do it with a solution that will cover all the bases. That's why you want a single vendor solution, so there's no gaps in your data protection. You don't have redundancies either. You just have exactly the right amount for your workloads, your risk tolerance, your particular business objectives. That's what Carbonite is. A single vendor that can do it all. Endpoint protection, enterprise grade endpoint protection with end-to-end block level encryption, true global deduplication. By the way, they have the patent on doing deduplication with block-level encryption. It's very sophisticated. It's very cool what they're doing. Bandwidth management tools minimize network disruption. That's important. If you're on a laptop or a phone and you're out there and you're using 3G, you don't want to be tying up your connection, backing the data up. So Carbonite does it smart. They also, of course, have remote wipe capabilities. So if that laptop or phone gets lost, your data is not lost with it. Carbonite supports over 200 operating systems, applications, and platforms with all the various ways you need to protect your data. Real-time replication and cloud failover. That's kind of the king of the hill for this. So that means you're always backed up to a cloud. And if anything should go wrong on your local stuff, you flip a switch and you're back up and running in seconds. No loss of revenue. They also have support for over 200 operating systems, applications, and platforms, backup and recovery for physical drives, of course. That's how they got started, but also now virtual machines. You can even back up your cloud environment, which is not only great for data protection, but great for moving from environment to environment. You're never locked in. Carbonite, a single vendor solution that simplifies your environment, eliminates gaps in your data protection, and is there 7 days a week with award-winning customer service. Carbonite is a secure, trusted provider. Learn more about Carbonite's data protection platform for business at Carbonite.com. That's Carbonite.com. We thank them for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech, talk dark patterns, Uber, Lyft, computers, biscuits. Ray in Escondido, California. Hello, Ray.
Hi there.
Welcome.
Hold on a second. Let me put my headphones on here.
Sure. So you can hear me.
Okay, there you are. Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Excellent. I have a MacBook Pro 17-inch that came with Lion and a 15-inch that came with Mountain Lion. Ever since the new versions of the OS came out, I would make a thumb drive of the recovery partition.
Yeah.
And I want to find out what's the best way to install an operating system on these laptops. I've been using the thumb drive, and I'll erase the partition or disk and install it with the thumb drive. But I don't connect to the internet. Do I need to connect to the internet?
Oh, that's interesting. Do you never connect it, or just during that installation?
Well, just during that installation. Once I install it, I go through the setup assistant. I'll create some user accounts,
right?
And then I'll go on and do the updates.
Well, so the current canonical way of installing a Mac OS operating system is to go to the App Store. In other words, be online and download the installer. Because you have two machines, what you do actually makes a lot of sense. You don't want to download 5 gigs twice. You just want to download it once, which you do, and then you can put the contents, the installer. If you Google it, people want to know how to do that. You can Google it. There's a file inside the package that says Mac OS installer. You make it a USB disk, and then you can bring it over to the second machine and install there. That is the same if you're doing it, within the, an hour of each other. That's the same.
Right.
Tomorrow Apple could update that installer, and the day after it updated. I imagine they do. I don't know how often they do. That's one of the advantages of doing it the way they do, because that installer can always be up to date with the latest patches, and whereas a disk or, something you buy in the store will always be out of date. So that's why they do it that way. But as long as you do it within a reasonable period of time of downloading it, that's going to be up to date. In any event, it doesn't matter, because as soon as you do go online, you're going to want to do the updates. And any updates that need to be applied will be applied at that time.
Well, that's a good question. Prior to Sierra, I believe that the updates weren't installed. Like if I installed, Yosemite today, in Yosemite next month or after.
Oh, that might be. They might freeze it. Yeah. They might freeze it.
They didn't have the updates, but I guess they do now with Mojave, because that's what I have on 15.
Yeah. So companies change this all the time, and they don't necessarily make it public what their system is. I don't think I've ever read how Apple does it. Microsoft, for instance, has changed their installer because the goal in the long run is to have you use as little bandwidth as possible. So it's always better if you can put it all in up-to-date package and have it just change the things it needs to change than if you do it piecemeal. So if I were Apple, I would do what Microsoft does, which is, package this stuff up so that only the things that need to be changed are changed. But I can't promise that's what Apple does. I don't think they've ever really spoken about how to do it. I've never read it. Maybe somebody knows and they can tell us. So if your question is, does it matter if I do it, my way or via the store, as long as they're reasonably close together, no. And actually, it really doesn't matter because you're going to apply those updates anyway once you go back.
Right. Well, because I did run into an issue with High Sierra. I installed it on the internet. I went to the App Store, updated. And after I installed it, I did the updates. And this was like March, 25th? And there was a new security update, 2019-002.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it would update. I'd turn off the computer, restart it and everything, and then go back on. Then I still have an update.
This is why you want to roll those updates into the big installer as opposed to piecemeal. Exactly why.
Right. Well, I did an update from Yosemite to Sierra to High Sierra.
Right.
And
it generally would be better, and that's what I was kind of...
Well, the problem I had is that it installed three of the same update.
Oh, yikes.
And then it would crash. It would restart, and I'd get a fatal error, and it would crash.
Yeah.
And I called Apple, and I asked him about that, and he said, well, if you have more than one security update downloaded, it's with like within 5 minutes of each other. The first or second one will be erased, and the third one would
be in theory.
Right. Well, anyway.
So this is, I mean, look, it's really what we're doing here, which is modifying the operating system, sometimes dramatically, while the system's running.
Right.
Is nutso. It's not the ideal way to do it. I have to say, both Apple and Microsoft have gotten very good at it, and problems are few and far between. But for years, my recommendation was, oh, don't do that. Download the update, wipe your hard drive, and install it completely clean and fresh. And
right.
And frankly, I used to do that every 6 months because over time things would get messed up. Problems like you just talked about would happen.
Right.
Updates would be misapplied. And so it for a long time, that was the only reasonable way to do it. I don't make that recommendation anymore because it is a lot of work. And frankly,
right.
The companies have gotten very good at it. I think that most of the time you don't have problems. You may have run into it, in which case, you know, the nice thing about Apple, which I've always liked, is they offer a network install. You can go to the store, buy a new drive, take the old one out, put the new drive in, which means you have no recovery partition, you have nothing,
mm-hmm.
and install over the network. It's slow because you have to download the whole operating system, but there's no charge to do that. I think that's a really cool thing that Apple does.
Well, that's exactly what I did. I put a new drive in.
Yeah.
Well, I used, and then I updated it. And it still did the same thing. In fact, I installed High Sierra almost three different ways. I did it with the recovery disk. I did the option command R because that installs the latest one for the 17-inch, which is High Sierra. And I still had the same problem.
That's so weird.
I look at the Apple security update page, which shows all the latest updates whenever they come out. And
they're not communicative, though. They don't, their position on this is if we tell people exactly what it's for, the hackers will know. So compared to Microsoft, they're extremely uncommunicative about what's going on in their security patches. Sometimes if it's a well-known exploit that, they want to make sure everybody understands they've fixed, they'll tell you. But there's always, in every Apple update, on iOS, on Macintosh, there's always stuff that they just refer to as general bug fixes and security updates. They don't get specific. So you can never be sure you got what
right.
you got. Or even, I would guess, even sometimes the same, as in your case, the same number update has different patches that they maybe a week later said, I'm not sure that happens, but I wouldn't be surprised. It's not a good practice. It's a terrible practice, but it could be what's happening. That's why they would, in theory, delete the previous one and only apply the most recent.
Yeah, because when looking at that page, you see two different days, one on the 25th and one on the 29th for the same security patch.
Yeah.
And I asked Apple about that because there was a third one with Javi.
Right. So they slipstreamed something else. They found out about something else and put it in the same patch.
Okay.
That's not cool, but they did it.
Mm. I have one more question.
Okay, hang on because I got to take a break, but I will talk to you off the air. Basically, though, your takeaway from this, everybody, update. The minute an update's available for your operating system or any of your software, especially software that goes on the internet, update it. It's the only path to safety. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. Sorry, Ray. I just ran out of time there.
Oh, no problem.
What was your other question?
The file vault. I always turn it on.
Me too.
And for some reason, it's supposed to allow you to pick users to stay to be part of the login process and then restart. But for some reason, it's not doing that. As soon as you get the code, it restarts, or it doesn't even restart. It just encrypts right away.
What is it? What are you expecting it to do?
Well, usually, once you turn it on, it'll give you. You can either have a security code for your Apple ID, or you can write it down. Have the option.
Oh, you have to ask it for this backup code. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I get the backup code. And then after that, usually it'll show all your user accounts, and you can pick which ones you want to show on the logon screen.
Right.
And for some reason, it's not doing that anymore.
I think it's just they moved it out of File Vault to users, I think.
Uh-huh. Well, I figured out, I got the book, and I figured out how to use Terminal to remove certain user accounts.
That's actually a useful, that's a very useful command line, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's normal.
I think they just moved it. They do this all the time. They move stuff around within system preferences. Right. I think they moved it over to users where it makes more sense. I've seen that setting in users where you can say, "Who do you show all the names or just show mine or don't show any names?"
Usually, well, the administrator is always shown, and then you can pick another.
You can say no names at all, which is often a good choice for security that it doesn't offer any potential login. Right. So I think that's all.
It doesn't offer that anymore.
Yeah, well, it might, but it just may not be in the file vault is what I'm saying. Might not be in that security area. I don't know. Look around.
Right. Well, you know, one more question real quick. On my iPad or on my computer, I usually check the lock on an encrypted website to check the certificate to make sure everything's kosher.
Good.
How do you do that on an iPad?
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah, because desktop, and by the way, the new iPad OS, you're going to get desktop Safari. I don't know. Let me just look at Safari. There's got to be a way, right? Yeah, you don't have that lock anymore, do you?
Well, you know, I'm looking at I'm on that Apple.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Page.
So,
but you
I see the lock. Yeah.
Yeah. You can see the website address once you...
And there's a lock there, yeah. But I don't see how to check the certificate. I don't know. That's going to be a Google. Right. That's Google that one. I don't know. I never thought about it. Yeah, I don't do it that often, but you're right. It should be available. Every browser, it should be available because that's very important.
Well, do you recommend going on your bank or important websites on a laptop? Or
yeah, it's fine. Make sure you have the padlock. And I think you're smart. You do more than most people. You do more than me. It's prudent every once in a while to click that padlock and see if that certificate came from the bank. Because if it didn't, you're not really with the bank. You're on a secure site that goes somewhere else.
Yeah, I do it all.
Or there's a man in the middle. Yeah. So I think that's a very good little habit I should get into, too.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Nice to talk to you, Ray. Have a good one.
Hey, you too. Thanks.
Bye. Well, hello, welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and dark patterns and all that jazz. Everything technology focused. I can't say everything with a chip in it anymore because the internet doesn't really have a chip in it. Does the internet have a chip in it?
Yes.
It has a chip on its shoulder,
yes.
But it doesn't have a chip in it. Well, I guess it runs on things with chips in it. Anyway, we live nowadays, a lot of our world is non-corporeal, is abstract, doesn't have a physical presence. I guess electrons are physical. But, you know, I mean, that's the level of it. It's just electrons flying around. And yet it feels like the real deal, doesn't it? If you want to talk about that... If I haven't scared you, 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We got a website. It's free. It's open to all. It's made of bits. TechGuyLabs.com. Not kibbles and bits. That's a different kind of bits. Line 2, David, Orange County, California. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I enjoy your show, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I am looking to project my phone onto an external monitor, but I'm looking to do it in a portrait, you know, view of the monitor.
You want it to be not widescreen, but tall screen.
Correct. Correct.
Boy, my studio manager, John, is laughing at this point because for years that was a goal of ours.
Okay.
Because we do a lot of podcasts, video podcasts on my podcast network, and many of the co-hosts on that show are coming in via Skype. So we had this crazy nutty idea of putting them around a round table on TVs. But I thought it'd be better if it was tall, portrait mode, because maybe that's why you want portrait mode, because then they're like they look like people sitting at the table instead of, you know, having wings. But maybe, I don't know. Why do you want to do it?
Well, it's doing a presentation and
it's tall.
I want to talk about an app on my phone. and I want to project.
Oh, I get it.
Onto a monitor.
You want the monitor to have the same aspect ratio as your phone.
Exactly. Yes.
I get it. I mean, obviously, no matter what you do, it's going to have black bars. But if the monitor were arranged vertically, not horizontally, at least the phone would be bigger and the bars would be smaller.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking at.
So what we found, and this was some years ago, was it was a very expensive prospect because there is there's stuff that'll do that. And notice, by the way, Apple, with its $1,000 monitor stand, and one of the things that stand does is allow you to rotate the monitor, and the operating system will automatically rotate the screen. So one solution is to buy a $5,000 Apple XDR monitor, but don't forget the $1,000 stand that goes with it.
All right.
Not ideal, is it? Do you have a monitor you can rotate?
I do.
Okay.
And I'm just looking
almost
for a very
always.
Solution.
Yeah. Almost always, if the monitor rotates, the operating system will say, "Oh, you're no longer 16:9; you're 9:16," and it'll flip it'll flip the stuff around, right? So, in fact, all you really need is a way to put your phone's screen on that screen. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Do you use an emulator to show off the software? How do you show off? You want to plug the Android into that monitor?
It's the first time I've done this, so I thought maybe I could take the phone and transfer the screen onto my computer, and then from there, I guess, run it to the monitor.
Yeah, but you want it live, though. It's not just an image of the screen. You want the phone to be actually operating.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
So there are a couple of ways you could do this. Android, is it Android?
That's an Apple phone.
Okay. I was so close. Android, actually Apple does this too. Both Android development systems and iOS development systems, in the case of Apple, it's Xcode, have an emulator mode that you can run your program on the Mac, and it looks like it's on an iPhone. Or an iPad. You can choose whatever output you want. If you rotated the Mac screen, it would now be in horizontal. You know, it would be upright, and you could make that vision of your beautiful app as big as you want. So, whoever are you? You're not writing the app?
No.
Is it your app or is it somebody else's app?
It's actually something that we developed.
Yeah. So talk to your developers. Talk to your developers because say I want to run – instead of plugging my phone running our app into the computer so I can show it, what you really want to do, I think the easiest thing to do would be run the emulator on that Mac. And then you could make it as big as you want. And the developers, the people who are working on your code will know how to do that. It's very easy. In fact, that's how they develop. Almost always, as you're developing an iOS app, you develop on the Mac with an emulator that looks like so you can see what it looks like on a phone, and then eventually you'll port it over to the phone so you can it's actually running on a phone. But that's generally how you do it. So that's one solution. Sounds like what you're looking for is a way to AirPlay the phone onto the screen. Is that what you're looking for?
That'd be wonderful if I could do that.
Yeah. So for that, you need an Apple TV.
I have that.
And you need to connect it to a monitor that you can rotate. My only question is whether the Apple TV operating system is smart enough when you rotate the monitor to rotate the screen. You know, that's what Mac does. That Windows do that because they know that sometimes people will be using those operating systems on rotating screens in portrait mode. I don't know if Apple TV would be smart enough to do that, but that would be worth a try. So you can AirPlay to the Apple TV. You've done that, right? You know how to do that.
Yes.
Try doing that and then rotating the screen.
I tried that yesterday, actually.
Oh, what happened? It was sideways.
It's sideways,
yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Because they're saying, well, we don't need to build that in. Nobody's going to have a sideways TV.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, Leo. You think people would want to, like, present their phones, if they're doing any kind of presentation or anything, be able to present their phone, what looks on their screen, onto a monitor and have the same aspect ratio.
Yeah, because it would look more like your phone.
It would be beautiful. You could do beautiful presentations and what have you. And I found it very strange that wasn't just very easily done. So
it really is, I'm racking my brain here. You know, Samsung has a thing they call DeX, which when you dock your phone in it, becomes a desktop operating system. And I bet you DeX rotates, but that's not going to help you because it's Samsung, not iPhone.
Yeah.
I'm looking at iPhone presentation mode. There may be. Apple may have hidden away somewhere.
Okay. Well, look, I'm jotting all these great ideas down. I can look into them later on this afternoon.
I'll tell you what. I'm looking at when you rotate the phone, the slides will pivot to full screen. No, this isn't for showing your phone's screen. You're right. You'd think that. And I think a lot of people do that using Xcode in the Xcode emulator on a Mac. But you want to just go somewhere, go into a conference room, plug your phone in or AirPlay your phone to a screen and have that screen be portrait mode so that everybody can see that app running at full screen. Let me keep thinking about it. So this is a startup for you, David?
It's a little app that I developed. I work in the produce industry myself.
Nice.
and for my day job. And we built a little weather application specific for the produce industry.
Awesome. So you want to go around to different grocery chains and present this app in the conference room, and you want them to see it full screen.
Correct.
Portrait.
I'm not a tech savvy guy, to be honest with you, and we were invited to a tech conference to present our app.
Even better. Don't give up. The show is not over. The show is young. Somebody will come up with it, or I will keep researching and figuring it out. I think the Apple TV is going to be your best bet, and you could bring that to a conference because you'd AirPlay to the Apple TV, and the Apple TV has HDMI out, which is what almost everybody now expects at a conference.
Yes.
So yeah, it'd be just like bringing a laptop. Yeah. Correct. I bet you there's a way to do that. I'm gonna chew on this.
That'd be wonderful.
Just like a fine Bosque pear.
All right.
Thank you.
A hard biscuit, huh?
A hard biscuit. No, I'm going produce with this analogy, man.
All right. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo. Thank you very much.
If you can figure it out, let me know. 8888 Ask Leo. I feel like there's a way. You're right. I mean, he's absolutely right. Why wouldn't Apple do this? There's got to be a way. This would be a common use, I would think. You could also go to our website, techguylabs.com, leave a comment there. How do I take my phone and present it at a big speech on a display in portrait mode so that the phone is as big as can be? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. Samsung is making a vertical TV. Well, see, he's going to do it at a conference, though. Oh, my God, that's hysterical. Okay, I'm going to mention this, though. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Huh, that's hysterical. That is nuts. The Cero. Flat screen with a rotate. Oh, it's got a rotating display. Ah, it can be synced with a phone via NFC and then simply mirrors the phone. This is so cool. $1,600 available in South Korea only right now. Wow. I love that. That's hysterical. Yeah, I mean, Facebook figured it out with the portal, right? That's exactly what Facebook does with the portal. He's going to do it at a conference. I imagine he's going to be on stage. Yeah, I was looking at that Marsworm, that Apple tech note, but that really is just, it doesn't tell you how to rotate it. That's just display mode. I think this is going to be more and more complicated, common, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah! 8888, Ask Leo. I'm sorry you feel that way. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. You know, I know that in the next generation of iOS that we will have the ability to do what David was asking. I'm sure of it. Because so much video now is being shot vertically. And in fact, Samsung, thanks to Mike B in our chat room who told me about this, Samsung is now offering a television set that rotates vertically so that when you're looking at your Snapchat or Instagram stories that were shot in vertical video or your TikTok sing-alongs, they'll play back full screen on your Samsung monitor. You rotate the monitor and it automatically rotates the source and plays full screen. This TV system from Samsung is called the Sero, S-E-R-O. Unfortunately, it's only available in Korea, and it's a 43-inch TV for $1,600, so it's a little bit pricey. I wonder if it even will work with iPhone. Although, isn't Samsung, yeah, Samsung's building Apple TV into their TVs. So, Janko Wreckers at Variety had the story not so long ago, just about a month ago, about this vertical TV. That's a sign, a symbol, a signal that someday soon this will be an easy thing to do. Mike B's, or actually Tech in San Diego, is pointing out that rotating monitors have been around forever. Oh, yeah, I've had rotating monitors. I still have rotating monitors. Apple's new monitor rotates. That's not unusual, and the operating system handles that. And one of the reasons that's not unusual is not because of Snapchat or Instagram, but because programmers and people working on documents don't want wide. They want long. If you're doing page layout, you know, maybe you work in a newspaper. You want a screen that reflects the aspect ratio of the newspaper, tall, not wide. So these have been around forever. And the operating systems, Mac and Windows, handle it. You know, when they're connected to a monitor that rotates, the monitor sends them a signal, says my aspect ratio is now 9:16. And the operating system says, fine, that's what I'm going to do. Unfortunately, Apple TV doesn't sound like it's got that built in. I'm telling you, next generation, guaranteed. It's just vertical video is just too common. 8888-ASK-LEO. Maybe you know of a clever hack, a way to do this. Let's go on with the show. Micah in Maine. Hey, Micah. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Micah, you're coming up. It's Myron in Burnsville, Minnesota. Hi, Myron.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you great. Welcome.
Good. I had to switch to my car phone. What my question is, I've got the latest iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch.
Isn't that a sweet machine?
I absolutely love it. But I've always wanted a MacBook Pro, so, of course, before the announcement, I bought the 2018 13-inch MacBook Pro with the toolbar.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I got it for $250 off, so it was a good deal. But I'm just wondering, with the new iPad OS, I'm not by any means a power user, and I'm just wondering if with that new OS, if I really need a MacBook Pro.
It does depend on how much of a power user, you know, what you do with it. So it does somewhat depend. They're not going to give iPad OS, which is, by the way, thank you, Apple. Apple did something so uncharacteristic. They listened to their users. And many of the things they announced at the developers conference last week was stuff users have been begging for. I've been begging. I felt that the 12.9-inch iPad Pro was an amazing piece of hardware that was operating on running on an operating system that from 2007. It just was not, the operating system did not live up to the promise. So they're going to do something about it. They're kind of changing iOS to be a little bit more appropriate for iPad Pro users. It by no means will it be doing everything a MacBook could do. But among other things, they're going to add the ability to, you know, those your nice new shiny new iPad has a Type-C connector. You might look at it and say, gosh, I wonder if I could put a thumb drive in there and it would see it. No, you can't, but you will. They're going to turn that on an iPad OS. They're going to turn on better windowing capabilities. Nothing like a MacBook, but better. They're going to turn on more capabilities of the file manager. It's going to be a much improved operating system, but it's still not a desktop operating system. So what is it? Why did you get the iPad? What is it that you want to do with the iPad?
What do you mean, the MacBook Pro?
Or the MacBook Pro, yeah. But what is it that on the iPad you want to do that you can you felt like you had to get a MacBook Pro to do?
Oh, well, external hard drives.
Okay, so you'll be able to do that. That's a nice feature. I really think that's a much-needed feature.
Right.
But you're most people with their computers, they're surfing the net, they're getting their email, they're doing some shopping. Are you editing videos? Are you doing music? Are you doing anything a little bit more creative?
No, not really.
No put down here. But that was, so this was always the complaint about the iPad was that it was a content consumption device more than a content creation device. And I still, while you can do more content creation than before, I still think if what you're doing is creating content, you still will want to get a MacBook. But if it's just consuming content, buying things, surfing the net, reading email, I think the iPad is probably all you'll need. And it'll get better and better. Apple's really shown that they have the commitment to make it more of a real computer.
Right.
So, hey, you got a 13-inch MacBook is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
How about, just doing pictures? That type of thing?
Yeah, if you're doing photography, it's still a little challenge. You know what? The photo segment normally be coming up next. Let me talk a little bit about workflow changes right after this. There are Type-C thumb drives. So if you're serious, it depends how serious you are. For instance, I think that Apple's Photos app on the iPad is pretty good for a lot of people. You know, it gives you simple editing, sorting, organization. Do you feel like you need more than that?
No, not really.
Yeah.
I just don't know those programs.
So. Yeah. Well, Photos is a good start. There's a really good program called Snapseed that gives you even more editing capability for the iPad. There's Affinity Photo, which is really amazing on the iPad. There's some very good iPad stuff. Unless you're a professional photographer working with RAW files, I think the iPad is fine. If you're a pro and you've got thousands of images from a wedding, I wouldn't want to try to edit those on an iPad. But it doesn't sound like that's your need either.
So, I'm still within the time for taking it back.
Ah.
So I guess
The problem is you're not going to get iOS 13 I take that back. You could do the public beta next month, but it won't come out officially till the fall. You know what? From what you just told me, I don't think you need a MacBook.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. Have you used it?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's really nice. I mean, it's fast and.
You know, you're asking the wrong guy. I've got computers up the wazoo. I'm looking at four computers right now. Five, if you include six, if you include my phones.
Well, I've had Macs, but I've just never had a MacBook or a MacBook Pro.
I think that that 13-inch MacBook is beautiful. Do you like the keyboard? Is it okay?
Yeah.
That's the only complaint. I think the touch bar is a useless gimcrack, but it's there, and you know you can do things with it. Get better touch tool, that'll make it more useful. Look, if you want your $2,000 back, get it. You know you can always get a MacBook next year. There'll be newer updates next year.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Leo, I really appreciate
it. I didn't
it.
Help you at all, did I?
Well, maybe.
You gotta follow your heart, man. You work hard. You can afford to have both. Have both.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I've called you before. I always get nervous when I call you. I don't know why.
I don't know why either, Myron. Where's Burnsville? Is that near the big city? Are you near the Twin Cities, or are you?
Yeah, it's about 15 miles out of Minneapolis.
Okay, so it's a suburb of Minneapolis.
Yeah. That's where I called you from before. I'm a mailman. I've called you.
Oh, I remember you. Yeah, of course, Myron. Oh, I love talking to you. Yeah, I remember. Well, gosh, it's a tough decision. I think you should keep both, honestly. To me, the iPad never quite lives up to what a computer can do.
Right.
They work nicely together. You know, you're going to, in the new operating system, you're going to be able to use that iPad as a second screen. That'll make that 13-inch a desktop. It'll be really amazing.
That is true. I thought about that. One other really quick question. We're going to be traveling out of the country later on this year. Would I need to get, like, an adapter, or is there, we're going to the Philippines, so they've got 220 instead of...
Yeah, so you can use 220. It's the plug form factor that changes. Apple sells a little travel kit, but you can use any adapter that you pick up at the store. Most hotels even have adapters if people have left behind. I don't know what the Philippines adapter looks like, but you can use your power supply. That's fine. It works with 220. In fact, most technology does work with 220. You should check. If it says 120 to 240, then you're okay. But you'll need to get an adapter to make the plug work.
Oh, okay.
But you don't need a transformer. You can handle the voltage.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, no. On an iPad or a MacBook, they'll work fine with the higher voltage.
Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Myron. Take care.
Love your show.
Thanks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Apologies if you've tuned in to hear Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. You know how he is. He's out and about on some sort of photo jaunt. But that doesn't mean you can stop taking pictures for our tech guy photo assignment. The tech guy group is still taking your applications at flickr.com. We are looking for close-up. That's the assignment. You don't have to have a fancy camera. Your camera phone's just fine. In fact, many camera phones do great jobs of close-ups. Any picture taken before May 26, 2019 will not be allowed into the pool. So you have to take a new picture. That's the whole point of that. And tag it with TG close-up, one word. That way we know it's a submission. And when Chris gets back, he'll pick three of the submitted photos. They have to be a close-up. I see close-ups of money, dollar bills, ladybugs, airplanes. We've got quite a few submissions. We'd love to get yours. It's not a contest. There's no prize. It's just a way to get you out there taking pictures. Close-up is our assignment. Now we go to Micah in Maine. Thanks for your patience, Micah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning. You know, you were talking high tech, or you were talking knives earlier, I think, on the air.
I was talking with the old chef guy and talking about chef's knives.
You know, knives can be high tech, too. I got a high tech knife thing to talk to you about.
You're kidding. Yeah, tell me.
Best knife I've ever used. I love knives, and I've always bought good knives, and I keep them sharp, and what a pain.
You use them, I might add. You're using them for cooking.
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
Slicing and cooking. Okay. Slicing and cooking. And then I went to Harbor Freight, of all places.
I love Harbor Freight. It's geek heaven.
$13. $13, and you can get it online, I found a 6-inch ceramic chef's knife.
Yes.
The best knife I've ever had.
I have used ceramic knives. I love them. Ceramic is a fascinating material. It's essentially glass, but it's a super hard glass. It can be harder than metals. And so for a knife, the idea is it will preserve its edge longer because it's harder even than your metal knife. There is a drawback to any glass, ceramics included. They're more brittle than metals. So I found, and this happened to my beautiful ceramic knives, they are subject to chipping. You have to take very good care of them because if they can easily chip. And once they're chipped, they're really not very good for anything except maybe cutting.
Very true.
Bread. Yeah.
I was concerned with that too, but I figured for $13, let me chip it.
Yeah,
and I'll buy another one.
Buy another one.
It works great.
No, yeah, and they'll keep their edge a lot longer than a metal knife. You can't sharpen them. I mean, they are what they are. But that I agree. Yeah, knife technology is fascinating. We had a guy on the show some time ago with a company called V-Matter, and I think they did not survive. They had an Indiegogo. They were using a new material, and something called an amorphous metal that had been invented at a university and never used for anything. The idea was, the basic idea in material science is you can either have soft and scratchable or hard and brittle. kind of that's the scale. I guess I'm very oversimplifying it here. And so that's why if you have plastic lenses in your glasses, they're light, they're durable, but they scratch easily. If you have glass lenses in your glasses, they're heavy, and they don't scratch easily, but they're not so durable. That's kind of the axis. Knives, these V-Matter knives used an amorphous metal technology that combined kind of the best of both worlds. At least that was the theory. I think that they had a hard time convincing anybody. I have some V-Matter knives, though. They're sharpenable. They're very nice. I guess they now call it liquid diamond. Maybe that'll sell better than V-Matter. But I think it was an interesting idea. Material science is fascinating. I know you know. You're scientifically bent, Micah, so you understand. And when I say bent, I mean bent. Hey, let me ask you about the 737 MAX. What's the latest?
The latest is they're working on the software update, and it's going to come out. They pretty much have it going right now. It's got to go through the testing, but I don't think there are going to be any issues with it. I think, you know, it's going to have a bad reputation a little bit like the DC-10 did, but it's going to come back, and it'll be just fine without any problems at all.
I forgot about the DC-10. That was ages ago.
Yeah, it sure was, and
yeah.
That happened because McDonnell Douglas was rushing to get it out.
Right.
They were trying to get it out before Lockheed came out with the L-1011, and the word on the street in the factory was fly before they roll.
Oh, boy.
DC-10 was going to be in the air before the Lockheed L-1011 was even rolling out of the hangar. And so there were a lot of issues with the DC-10. But it came back and became a great plane. And as the MD-11 now, it's still in service with FedEx, and it flies all over the place.
I used to love flying the DC-10s, I have to say. Because last time we talked, we should mention Micah works on a couple of flying shows.
Aviation podcasts.
Aviation podcasts. Those are the words I was looking for. Including what? The pilot guy? Is that it?
The Airplane Geeks, which actually I'd like to tell you something about today.
Sure, please do.
And the Airline Pilot Guy.
Yeah.
Well, the Airplane Geeks have been invited down for the 12th year in a row, we think. We can't quite remember. To the Smithsonian Institute Udvar-Hazy Center.
Oh, I love the Udvar-Hazy. That is the best museum.
Every year, the Saturday before Father's Day, so this coming Saturday, they host Innovations in Flight, a family day, outdoor aviation display day. It's sponsored by United Airlines. They bring airplanes in so that you could actually tour a 777 or a 767. They all individual airplanes. Some friends are flying in that I know from Georgia in a Beechcraft Musketeer, so you can see that and tour that. Over 50 planes will be out there that normally aren't there, and they do all sorts of STEM aviation displays, going over the history of aircraft and what's happened with aviation over the past 100 years, and we'll be there. And actually, I mentioned it on your show last year, and one of your listeners flew up from Tampa just for the day
Wow. At
Dulles Airport to come to this event and visit us, the Airplane Geeks, because we'll be recording our podcast live from the floor of the Udvar-Hazy Center.
Oh, wow.
Probably right across from the Enola Gay.
Yeah. So the Udvar-Hazy Center is part of the Smithsonian. It's an annex to their Air and Space Museum. It's right by Dulles. It's easy to get to. And it's so big, they have a Concorde in there, a B-1 bomber, and apparently the Enola Gay, all under one roof.
There's no B-1, but the Concorde is there, the B-29 is there, there's an SR-71.
That's what I was thinking of, the stealth, the SR-71.
Right.
Yeah.
The Dash 80, the first aircraft, actually the original 707, just before the 707.
Do they have Lindbergh's plane there, too?
Lindbergh's plane is on the mall in the Air and Space Museum. But
right.
Udvar-Hazy Center is a series of three hangars where they used to
do restoration.
And now these three hangars have an amazing array
of
artifact aircraft. There's also a shuttle in there. The Discovery is in there.
That's right. So when is the event again?
It's this coming Saturday. It runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's free. You got to pay $15 for parking, but other than that, it's free. So if you're flying in for the day to Dulles Airport, you could Uber on over, be there for the day, and then if you come by our table, we'll tell you about the meetup at night.
Nice. Oh, that sounds so great. I'm glad you called to give that a plug, because that is a great event. Someday I hope to get out there. What a lot
We'd
of fun.
Love to have you there, Leo, but we'll put you behind the microphone.
What's your favorite plane? What's your favorite commercial airliner?
Commercial Oh, I don't know. I'd love to fly the 787 because it's made of composite.
Yeah.
When you fly in a 787, as I don't know if Johnny mentioned this or not, but if you can ever book yourself on a 787, do it because it's made of composite. They can keep the air pressure higher, so you're flying at a high. You're at a lower altitude inside the cabin. You have more moisture in there, and your jet lag is nowhere near as bad.
Ooh, we're flying a 787 this fall, as a matter of fact.
So you'll find yourself very refreshed.
On Lufthansa. Thank you, Micah. Leo Laporte.
Thank you.
The Tech Guy. Because I want to tell you about our sponsor for the podcast today, the fabulous folks at DO, DigitalOcean. Oh, I love DigitalOcean. Most developers love DigitalOcean. Lots of startups and many businesses, because DigitalOcean is the modern way to put your application or your website and make modern websites, our applications, online. It's a scalable compute platform, a server, if you will, with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. But it's inexpensive, easy to set up. In fact, you're less than a minute away from your next big thing on the internet on DigitalOcean. Yesterday, I set up a Node.js server because I'm going to start Dig 5. No, I'm not. But let me show you how easy it is. DigitalOcean is designed for developers and operators. By the way, because it's so popular, there are over 2,000 open source tutorials on how to do almost anything in the cloud using DigitalOcean. They've got a great control panel. Easy API lets you spend more time coding, less time managing infrastructure. They support Docker. They support Kubernetes, so you can improve availability, scalability, resource efficiency with containers. And DigitalOcean's marketplace lets you deploy pre-configured one-click applications so you can be up and running in less than a minute. Standard general purpose or CPU optimized configurations give you the flexibility to build, test, and grow your application. I'm going to do it right now. So here's all this stuff. Clusters, databases, volumes, domains, cloud firewalls, load balancers. I could go on and on, but let me just set up a droplet. That's what they call the basic DigitalOcean image. You can choose your distro, Ubuntu, FreeBSD, Fedora, Debian, CentOS. You can choose a container distribution, which is nice. So you can use Docker, and as I said, Kubernetes orchestration is available. You can also go to this one-click marketplace. Look at all the things I can install just with one button. Oh, you know, let's start my own GNU Social, my own social network. How about that? This is awesome. All the stuff you need right there. Yep. I could create that. Or how about a WordPress instance? Or maybe you just say, I've got a great idea for a web app. All I really need is a lamp stack. Shall we do that on Ubuntu 18.04? All right, I've chosen my lamp stack. Do I want a standard? Yeah, because I'm cheap. But if you know you're gonna need power, you can go to CPU optimized instances. I'm going all the way down to the $5 a month instance. Turn on backups for 20% of the price. In other words, $1 a month for me. Add block storage if you need it. Choose your server all over the world. Isn't this awesome? Do I want an SSH key? You bet. I like SSH logins. Let's call it Leo's Lamp. 1 minute, and it's provisioned and ready to go. That's how fast it is. DigitalOcean. You get cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerts, team accounts, full DNS management, 4 nines of uptime. I just love it. DigitalOcean, trusted by over 1 million developers. Go to do.co/twit today. You'll get a free $50 credit when you sign up. do.co/twit for a free $50 credit. DigitalOcean, designed for developers, built for businesses. My lamp stack is going to be done in seconds, and I'm going to be ready to get programming. do.co/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo. Glenn on the line from beautiful Las Vegas. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I am great. How hot is it today in Vegas?
I think it's going to be a cool and balmy 96 or 97 or so.
We might actually beat you. Here in Northern California, we're having a heat wave. What can I do for you, Glenn?
We don't have the 40% humidity on the clock behind.
That's what they always tell you when you're in Vegas. They say it's a dry heat.
That's it.
I love Vegas. I have to say, one of my favorite places to visit. What can I do for you?
When you guys,
Go ahead.
I love it when you guys come here for the NAB show, too. Or, I'm sorry, CBS show, too.
Yeah. We haven't been in a few years.
I get them mixed up.
We haven't been in a few years. We used to go to NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters show, every spring, and we'd go to CES every January. I haven't been to Consumer Electronics Show. I haven't been in a few years. I think I'm going to both this year. I'm making an effort to go to both next year.
All right. Yeah. I'll look for you then.
Good.
Because I go to NAB every year. I work for a production company here in Las Vegas.
Ah, nice.
Okay. My question is this. I have an old laptop. It's a Toshiba laptop, and when it was originally came out, it was a Windows 7 computer. I updated it to Windows 10, and just recently I decided I was going to buy a solid state drive and put it in there. I got the same size, a 500 gigabyte solid state drive, as the drive that was originally in the computer. Now I tried, and it's a Samsung solid state drive, I might add too. I tried to clone the drive, and it cloned everything on the C partition, but it would not clone the recovery partition.
Ah. Yeah, that may be because it's not a traditional partition. So it may not have that. It may not be available to it. Here's what I... go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's your question? I mean, you were able to boot it up, right? Everything's working?
Yeah, I was able... Everything's working. I booted up fine. It was so nice and quiet, too, not hearing that spinning drive there.
And how fast is the boot, right? Solid state's just awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious if there's any way of getting a Windows 10 recovery partition and putting it on there.
Yeah. Totally. So in next time, instead of doing a partition by partition, just clone the whole drive. And that should get all the partitions, depending on the clone.
That's what I did, I was using partition magic, but it did not do all the partitions.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it is an unusual, you know, the recovery partition isn't a traditional NTFS partition. It might be that it's, you know, locked down in some way. You don't really need it. In fact, and some would say, oh, well, consider yourself lucky because you can always download the recovery from Microsoft. If you search for Windows 10 Microsoft, you'll get a link to the media creation tool that will put a Windows installer on a 16 gig USB disk. Frankly, that's what I would do if I were you. That's your recovery partition. If you want the Toshiba brand recovery partition, that might be a different matter. This will be a vanilla generic one. It'll still work just fine. It just won't have all the specific Toshiba tools on it. You may also be able to, and you'll have to look in the start menu on your system. Many companies put a make recovery disk tool on there. And if they do, you can do it that way as well. And that will give you the Toshiba stuff. Just lost him. But you don't honestly need that recovery partition. It's handy to have because then, you know, you can go into the recovery menu on Windows 10 and you could do a fix this operating system. You can even do a full system restore or a reset. So it's handy to have, but it's no more handy than you would have on a USB key. And this way you get a few, I don't know, it's not huge, maybe a few gigabytes back. Normally when you install Windows 10, it will create it. So that's the other way. If you really wanted to, you know, I want it to be just like it was, you could just restore it. If you have your Samsung restore disks, if you made those disks or you made a USB key and you don't mind erasing everything, you know, back up your data, obviously, but erasing everything and restoring will also restore a partition, recovery partition. It's too bad that Partition Magic did not get the recovery partition. Normally when you clone a disk, it clones the whole disk. You should get the whole thing. Carol in Orange County, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Leo. I'm so excited to talk to you. Ooh, I love your show.
Thank you. I'm glad you listen. What can I do for you?
Little nervous, first time caller.
Take a deep breath. It's just you and me. There's no one else, so.
Okay. I'm starting up a really big project, and I'm going back to Virginia to cast a limited series.
How exciting! Are you a casting director? Is this what you do?
That's what I do. I do extras casting, so all those non-speaking roles.
How fun! I was just watching the making of documentary of Game of Thrones, and they focused on one of the extras, a guy who got to be a Stark soldier for something like 5 seasons, and it looked like so much fun. I know extras, you know, you don't get lines, you don't get great pay, but boy, it must be fun to be on the set and watch this stuff. So that's great.
I think they they get used to SetLife, and often they get upgraded. I mean, yeah. Every one of my projects, some extra gets upgraded with a line or gets featured. And
isn't
so
that cool?
That's always exciting. Yeah,
I was thinking when I retire, I'm sure you need old man extras, right?
Absolutely. We need all types, everybody.
So big project. You're going to Virginia.
Big project. Yeah, pre-Civil War. So it's very important that we get lots of pictures of everybody because the hair department wants to see their hair.
Yeah.
They have to be well lit. I did one last fall, and the photography organization, everybody had an opinion on my team, and it got out of control. So before I start this one, I want to do it right.
Yeah, because this Game of Thrones, you couldn't really be in the cast unless you had a nice, big, bushy beard. So I'm sure it's similar for pre-Civil War, yeah.
Right. Well, we're looking for very specific types.
Sure.
And the director is going to be very hands-on in picture-picking people.
Oh, boy.
Who's going to play a soldier? Who's going to play a slave owner?
So in the casting process, you are in an office?
Yes, I'll be in an office, and we'll have open casting calls, and I also will host virtual online casting.
Okay.
Where they
so
can
you,
come and
you
just
want a way
online.
To take the picture and store it? What are the things that you need?
Well, we need to categorize them. We need to basically, we have to label them by ethnicity, by age range, and by gender. And then once the director picks what categories he likes them for, then we have to stick those tags in there, too. And then once they work, we need to denote that they've worked a scene so that we don't focus on them later on and put them in another scene that would be a conflict of when, you know, wouldn't make sense.
Sure. Like, what's he doing there? He was just back at Chancellorville. He can't be there.
He couldn't be there. He was dead in the last scene. What's he doing alive?
Wow. So almost all, you know, every photographer kind of does this. Almost all programs that allow you to make galleries allow you to tag. And tags are going to be your best friend here. You're going to tag them with the type, tag them with the scene, tag them with any kind of information you want to keep. The good news is Google Photos will do all of that.
That's what we used last year.
Okay, what went wrong with Google Photos?
There were so many photos. We had 1,800 people come through a casting call, and then we had four pictures of each person. And when you start to get that much information in there, it really slows the system down when you're searching and you're trying to put things in.
You need to do it fast.
Yeah, and I wanted it to be, like Google Photos, I want it to be something that a team can work on so that, you're not busy for 2 hours, keep sorting those people. And, you know, somebody else take over.
That is a specialized need because most desktop photo managers are one system at a time.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. You talk about remote PC.
Yeah, no, you're not going to want to do that. That'll be way too slow because these are large images.
Yeah.
You might want to look at Lightroom. Lightroom now with Adobe Creative Cloud has cloud storage. You can have a dedicated version of Lightroom that synchronizes on multiple computers. We got to take a break. See that music? Hang on. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to talk to you off the air because there's going to be a solution here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Google Photos for you, when you loaded it, so everybody's looking at their browser, right, Carol?
Yeah.
And the problem is you would type in the search, bearded guy, 30 to 42, was in scene 4, hit return, and it would take a few seconds? Was that too slow for you?
Well, no, it would take time to roll. You'd be trying to, like, you'd be trying to sort pictures and trying to bring up a certain, like, you.
So one of the advantages, I think Google Photos actually is the right tool for you, but I think you need to move it to the, you need to move your understanding of how to use it a little bit. So
need more training.
I mean, for instance, I would use the albums feature because you can have the same picture in multiple albums. So what you have your intern do, and this is the advantage of Google Photos, is she can log into it. Everybody can. Hundreds of people can use it at the same time. But you have your intern do is make albums of people with mustaches, people with beards, people with long hair, people with short hair. Then make more albums, people with mustaches in scene 12. People, I mean, you can make as many albums with one picture can be in 20 different albums. So and the albums will be almost instantaneous. The other advantage the albums will have is they're shareable. So you can send the director a link of all the extras in scene 12, take 4. Because that's okay. An album. And then there's no searching involved. You've done the search ahead of time. That album will open fairly instantly. It won't be super fast. It won't be super fast if you're on a slow connection. And that's the biggest problem with Google Photos is internet bound. So if you're out there in Virginia and you're on a smartphone with a slow connection, that's probably where the frustration lies, I would guess.
Okay.
Don't casting companies have software that does this? It seems like everybody would need this.
They do. They do. And but the thing is, there's different companies that do it, that different software programs. And that kind of gets me to my next question. Because they want to then, once you use them, then they want to market to the extras that have signed up with you.
Oh, God.
They want to say, hey, sign up with us or pay for headshots. And I don't want my talent to be bombarded with emails. I've always promised them, look, if you get something from me, if you register, you're not going to get on a list.
That sucks that they do that. Yeah, oh, my God. So we don't. I understand why you don't want to do that, because privacy is completely reasonable. Google Photos is private, but it may not be fast enough because it's so online.
And then if they're doing software for my company, how do I know that my content and the people that are registered with me are in my property and they're not going to somebody else down the line?
Well, you have to trust Google, but Google absolutely does not let anybody else see your photos.
Okay.
So, I mean,
can I move to my next question?
Yeah.
Excellent. Right now, nobody answers their phone anymore. They see a number they don't recognize.
I don't. Nope. Nope. Good luck calling me. Yep.
So I utilize like a call mass texting system to warn them I'm calling or to actually have them call me.
Good idea. I'll be calling. Carol's going to be calling. Yeah. Got Carol online too.
Mm-hmm. It's Hollywood. basically though, and then we also email people a lot. But one of these programs that people have been marketing to me, that the fact that I sign up with them for an extras casting software program online, they do this thing where they send a text and an email kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
Kind of combined. Are there any online sources for companies that'll give me software or I can sign up with them to actually do this mass texting and an email at the same time?
Again, you could do it, roll your own. Every single cell phone can be texted via email. So if you have somebody's cell phone number, all you need to do that is to know what carrier they're on. That's the one thing you'd have to ask. Okay, and who's your carrier? Because if you want to text somebody on AT&T, there's a special AT&T email gateway that you email, phone number at, I don't remember what it is, gateway.att.net. So you could have that in your contact information. You have their email address, but you could also have their text email address. And when you email them, send it to both. Or you could create groups and have both of those in there and send it to both. So you could do it all within your email program, in other words.
Okay, fascinating. I did not know that.
Yeah, but the key is, and this is the thing you may not have, every carrier has a different email address. So if you search for SMS and Verizon email, for instance, let me just look. It's phone number at vtext.com. But that'll work with Verizon, but you have to know they're on Verizon. But I guess you can ask the extras that. You can put that on the form.
Sure, when they register. Yeah.
Who's your carrier? Because we'd like to send you text messages. That's an easy, much easier way, frankly, for you to text. You don't have to use your phone to do it.
I like it. Well, with Call Multiplier, they allow you to do it, and you can, like, if I'm doing a text that I want to send out first thing in the morning and it's 11:30 at night.
They'll schedule it.
Yeah.
And any good email program will allow you to do that as well. So you could set up, you can do that as well.
Great.
It's interesting. I mean, I think probably you'd always be better off using a specialized program for casting. But if I understand, it's interesting. So do they charge you for these programs and then still?
There's some companies that'll charge you for the program if your people that have registered with you don't buy enough of their product.
Oh man.
It's just not right.
That's so scammy.
They get a bum deal sometimes. The background actors get a bum deal a lot of the times.
Yeah, because most people aren't like you. They don't care.
Yeah. But I feel like I represent the talent as well.
Good for you.
Good for you. Yeah.
I'll be looking you up when I retire.
Okay. can I give a little plug?
Yeah, what's the name of it?
CarolGrantCasting.com.
Well, let me write this down. I'm going to say it when we get back. Carol Grant.
GrantCasting.com.
And we'll put this in the show notes.
For so Virginia listeners, we're going to need people all the way until November.
So you're looking for people. And it's not, you get a stipend, right? It's not a lot of money.
It's a, well, we haven't agreed on the rates yet. We want to pay people a little bit more than usual because they're going to be in remote areas and they're going to have to go to a fitting.
I think it'd be so much
it's
fun.
It's more than minimum wage.
Nice.
You know,
it's like $100 a day or something. It's not, you're not going to get rich.
No, you're not going to get rich, but it's something you can always tell your kids about, and it's something that, you know, it makes good dinner conversation
so much
with
fun.
Friends.
Oh,
guess what I did last
yeah.
week?
Yeah. Oh, and I can't wait to see this show. I know you can't tell me anything about it, but I'll be keeping my eye peeled for a pre-Civil War show with a cast of thousands.
Yes. I wish I could tell you, but I know I can't.
No, I know you can't. No, I wouldn't even ask. Yeah. Hey, pleasure to talk to you, Carol. Thank you. I know I'm not a huge help, but honestly, sometimes it is, if you could just figure out, you know, just now's a good time before you go to spend some time with Google Photos and see. I bet you could do almost everything you want to do speedily. The only issue is if you've got a lot of images and you're on a slow cell phone connection, it's going to take a long time.
Yeah, maybe I can put out there that I'm hiring somebody with Google Photos to go ahead and get me the scoop on how to do it quickly and easily.
Clever! Hey, it's a pleasure talking to you, Carol.
You take care, Leo.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. I'm here to help. We were talking to Carol, who's a casting director. I had no, you know, this is an interesting universe. She casts extras. So she's not casting the main characters, but she's casting extras. And she had an interesting problem. There is casting software that specifically will do all the things she wants. But she said, and I was surprised to hear this, that these companies, which generally give their software away, do so because then they use the information in the casting database to solicit the extras. You want prints? You want headshots? We can make those for you. They make their money off of upselling to the extras themselves. And Carol says, I don't want to do that with my extras. I feel a responsibility to protect the actors, protect the talent. So she wants to not use some of the off-the-shelf casting software, but do it. I think Google Photos will do it as long as you have bandwidth. If you don't have bandwidth, you've got the same problem with any program, because if you've got multiple people using it and the data is stored in the cloud, bandwidth's going to be a critical issue no matter what. I think Google Photos, Google's got more bandwidth than anybody, especially in Virginia. You're good. They're very close to the big Google Network Operations Center in Nova there. I think you're going to get the best results. It's a question of just learning to use the capabilities of Google Photos, which really are mind-boggling. The search capabilities alone, the artificial intelligence built in, and then the ability to create multiple albums, all of that, I think, could probably get the job done. She said, if you're in Virginia, you're listening to the show, you're going to be in Virginia this fall, and you'd like to be an extra in a show she's casting for, they haven't set the rate yet, but she says more than minimum wage, CarolGrantCasting.com. She said, can you give me a plug? I said, I sure can. CarolGrantCasting.com. I think it'd be fun, wouldn't it? Casting in Virginia from July through October. Oh, actually, it says on her webpage what it is. It's a series for Showtime. Okay. An epic pre-Civil War period piece. You know who? I bet you there are a lot of Civil War reenactment folks who have excellent sideburns and can bring their own muskets. 888-88-ASK-LEO, the phone number. On we go with the show, line 3. John is in Portland, Maine. Hello, John.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Pretty good.
What can I do for you today?
I have a computer. I have a graphics card, an RX 570.
Yep.
It has two HDMI and two display ports.
Right.
Right now, I have two TVs plugged into the HDMI. Can I put a third monitor without killing it?
Yeah, probably. That's a pretty high-end graphics card. That's a nice graphics card. Are you a gamer?
not very good.
You don't have to be good to have good equipment. That's one of the newer Radeon cards, a very nice card. And usually you can handle many monitors with these modern cards. They have lots of RAM, lots of horsepower. I mean, it won't hurt it to try plugging it in. You've got, you know, there's four ports on there. You can also look in the manual on the 570 and see how many monitors it can handle. But four is not too many for most modern video cards. And this is one of the most modern. This is a very nice card. So I think you're probably all right. What game do you play?
I tried to play PUBG.
Yeah. Have you tried Fortnite? Have you tried Fortnite?
No.
The problem is, for people of a certain age, you and me, and by that I mean anybody over 20, there's all these teenagers in there who have very fast twitch reflexes and minds that have been carefully honed over the last decade to play these games better than any adult. And you just go in there, and PUBG and Fortnite, they're what we call battle royale games, where if you get killed, the game's over. So every time I play those games, it's over practically the minute I get in there. But keep trying. Don't give up, okay? Yeah, you should be. I think that's a nice card. It'll say, if you look at the manual or look online, it'll say how many monitors it can handle. I wouldn't run out and buy a monitor. I'd try it before you buy anything, but it won't hurt anything to plug in four monitors and see. Nowadays, people often run multiple monitors. I can't. It's hard for me to work without three monitors on my desktop. I need it. Scott, Orange County, California, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Leo, how's it going, man?
It's great. How you doing?
So, I've been editing video professionally on Apple computers for like 20 years now, and this new Mac Pro that came out, have you checked out to see how much it's going to cost if it's fully spec'd out with all the extra RAM?
Are you drooling, Scott? Are you drooling? So you're still using Final Cut?
Yeah.
We used Final Cut for years in our podcast. Of course, we don't need anything. We're not doing feature films or anything. But when Apple redid Final Cut, they took out a critical feature for us, an ability to use a sand. So we just abandoned it. We went to Adobe Premiere and abandoned Macs. We bought a bunch of Dell Precision workstations that have been great workhorses for us. But I have to say, these new Mac Pros, this is exactly what Apple should have done 6 years ago. It's a great thing. They start at $6,000 without a keyboard, mouse, or monitor. We don't know. That's all we know. We don't know. And by the way, that's a ridiculously underperformant $6,000. You only get eight cores. You only get 32 gigs of RAM. You only get a 256 gig hard drive. No one knows how much they'll cost. I'm guessing at least if you want to get, you know, a fairly well-equipped one with enough memory to do the editing you need to do and mostly the storage. You need high-speed storage. It'll be off the Thunderbolt 3 port. It won't be internal, but you'd like to have some speedy storage. It's going to set you back $25,000, $30,000 easy. And then don't forget the $6,000 for the monitor.
Right.
Which you probably don't need. You probably don't need, but it's...
RAM for, you know, the 1.5 terabyte.
Yeah.
Gig RAM. It's $20,000.
Yeah, just for the RAM. And if you look at that Xeon W processor, they're saying a 28-core Xeon W processor. Those can be as much as $10,000 for the chip.
Right.
So the chip and the RAM alone, we're talking $30,000. I'm sure it would be easy to get this computer up to $100,000. But you tell me, because you're a pro, you don't mind spending a lot of money for the gear you're using day in, day out. If it's going to save you time and let you do a better job, it's worth it, right? This is your tool.
All right. I'm going to throw kind of a curve. So I'm 61 now, and I've been doing this since I was 30, right? And,
yeah.
I actually make documentaries with my iPhone now.
I know.
Okay. And... So Soderbergh made his last movie with one.
That's right. And, that's right.
And so I'll give you kind of an example. So I'm going to Vegas right now. I'm in the car. They've got AT&T has that 5G evolution going on in Vegas and parts of L.A. now, right?
Ooh.
the upload to the internet is like 60 megabits. So wow. I'm doing little mini documentaries on my iPhone with the school district that's paying me. I'm in Vegas editing on my phone and giving it up to YouTube like in seconds at that 60 megabits.
Yeah.
Right? And
well, this is the point: is it, there are many ways. Nobody's going to say that's the only way to make a movie any more than they're going to say now you have to go out and get an Alexa camera to make the movie. We have choices, but if you wanted to do a movie in HDR with 8K, and you wanted to edit it in a reasonable time frame, you might want a Mac Pro, but you could afford a Mac Pro, right? So I think this is for a special part of the market. You're absolutely right. Everything you want to do could be done on an iPhone.
I'm literally doing a 90-minute documentary, and it's going to take me all of 10 hours.
That's right. That's right.
Shoot and edit.
That's what's exciting.
Movie.
Absolutely exciting about the era that we're in. I mean, the tools to make this stuff, both at the high end and the low end, are better than ever. So you get to, you know, get out of the way. You're not quite old enough, nor am I, but you probably remember when everything changed in Hollywood. It was in the 70s, right around the time of Bonnie and Clyde, which was the Warren Beatty movie that really was the first of a new generation of filmmakers, filmed primarily out in the field. Because prior to that, the cameras used to make movies were so big you couldn't go outside. You had to do it in a soundstage. And so location photography, that was pretty special. But in 1967, Bonnie and Clyde, shot entirely on location, for the first time with cameras that were small enough for somebody to take outside. They were still bigger than they are today, but they were, for the first time, it changed filmmaking. It changed filmmaking. And the movies we saw starting with that movie in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s were so different from the movies we saw in the 50s and the 60s. Well, that's what we're going through now. Forget a 16-millimeter camera you could put on your shoulder. You can do it with a phone in your pocket. And I think, as far as I'm concerned, all that really means is the scope for creativity is unlimited. And you'll have filmmakers who can't afford an Alexa, but they can afford an iPhone, making amazing things. The thing that doesn't change, Scott, is the talent that you bring to the game. As a professional editor or a professional screenwriter or actor or director, it just means talent is more important. You don't have to have $60 million to make a feature film, but if you have the talent, you can do some amazing things. And I think that's what's so exciting about the internet era. And you know, there's negatives. We talk all the time about the negative of YouTube and the horrific effect YouTube has had on the psyche of a whole generation. But at the same time, it also enabled creators with virtually no money to have a voice. And I think that's very exciting, especially if you've got talent. Hey, nice to talk to you. Enjoy your trip to Vegas. Going down 15. 8888 Ask Leo. It's Hollywood Day, isn't it, today on the Tech Guy Show. I love that. We'll have more of your calls right after this.
Dark patterns are features of interface design crafted to trick users into doing things that they might not want to do, but which benefit the business in question. Here's an example. Have you ever tried to delete your Amazon account? Here's the Amazon homepage. What's the first thing you might think to do? The obvious place to look is the account dropdown here. Once you're in here, you look around. It's a lot of information, but if I'm interested in deleting my account, I think that your account is probably a good place to go. Once I'm on this page, there's a lot more information, payment options, login and security, and a bunch of stuff down here. Unfortunately, you could click every link on your account page, but none would deliver you to a place where you could actually delete it because it's not here. In order to actually delete your Amazon account, you have to go all the way down to the bottom of the page. And under Let Us Help You, click Help. Once you're in here, you have to navigate to Need More Help because You know, putting it on this page would just be too easy. Then click Contact Us. This is where it starts to get ridiculous. It's still nowhere to be seen, but of the four options on the top that you want help with, click Prime or Something Else. You want the Something Else. In this Tell Us More About Your Issue dropdown, there's still nothing that suggests account deletion. You just have to know to click Login and Security. And then in a second dropdown, there it is. The magic button, close my account. Except in order to actually do that, you now have to have a chat conversation with an Amazon associate who's going to tell you all the reasons account deletion is a bad idea. See, you can't delete the account yourself. They have to do it for you. This is a dark pattern, a crappy user experience that intentionally makes it difficult, almost impossible without help, to do something that hurts Amazon. UX specialist Harry Brignall categorizes this specific kind of dark pattern as a roach motel, a design that makes it very easy for you to get into a situation, but very hard to get out. Brignall is actually the one who coined the term dark pattern in 2010, and he's been cataloging and lecturing about the issue ever since. Many of these dark patterns we're all familiar with. I only have to search my email for a few seconds to find one. For example, here, I'm getting spam emails from Architectural Digest. I scroll down and look at that. This is a mess, but it's a mess on purpose. The unsubscribe link is here, but it's devilishly hard to see. That's because it's the same font and virtually the same color as the rest of the fine print. Here's another dark pattern that uses color to misdirect. Over at the user testing blog, Jennifer Jerome points out that the mobile game
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. What you got to say? Call me. I'd like to hear from you. Caroline in Simi Valley, hey, California. Simi Valley. Hello, Caroline. Leo Laporte, Caroline, the tech Leo guy. Laporte. Whoa, I hear myself.
Hi. Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Hey. Hi.
Is your radio on?
Your radio on?
I'm getting
no.
A lot of echo back.
A lot of echo.
All right, you talk, I'll listen.
Okay. My son. He wants a gaming computer. He's 12 years old, and I don't have a very big budget.
I would tell him, well, it's up to you, but what I would say is you don't need a gaming computer. You need a gaming console, and get him a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox, probably a PlayStation 4.
Well, he really wants to play Fortnite. That's his.
Well, Xbox plays Fortnite beautifully.
Okay.
And the reason is, first of all, you can get an Xbox for about $250. You hook it up to your TV. Actually, this is a good time to buy. They're having a big sale.
Big sale.
Up to $100 off. And that ends June 17th. It started out last Friday. So this would be a good time to, in fact, you want to make him really happy. This will take the sting out of not getting a PC away from him. They have an Xbox One S Fortnite Edition. It's purple. It has a special purple controller. It's perfect for anybody who's a Fortnite fan, and it's $100 off. So that's where I would start, mostly because, first of all, it's just a gaming machine. Now, you may say, well, I want him to have a computer for schoolwork and stuff like that, and you might. But the problem is if there's a game on that computer, he's never going to do any schoolwork. He's just going to play the game.
That is true.
If you put it on Xbox, it's going to be on a TV in the living room. You'll know when he's playing. And you can control it a little bit better.
Okay.
Also, it's cheaper. And there are fewer issues with configuration, viruses, all the problems that PCs are heir to. An Xbox not. You know, you don't even have to go out to a game store anymore. You download the discs, you download the games, and you play them. And Fortnite's free, so all you have to worry about is him spending thousands of dollars on special outfits.
Yeah, right.
Which you know all about already. So I think a console is a good recommendation. Now, you may say, but he's in sixth grade. He needs a computer. You should look. Is he going to go to middle school next year?
Yeah, so he'll be moving into seventh grade.
So you should check with the school to see, because many schools now have what they call one-to-one programs where he'll be provided with a Chromebook or an iPad or something like that for school.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
Okay.
At the moment, he's got a laptop, which he's had for about 3 or 4 years.
And he says, I just can't play Fortnite on it because it's too slow.
Yeah, so then he uses my phone. so he will need a...
Yeah, when it's time for school, get him a Chromebook, which is also just a few hundred dollars. It doesn't play Fortnite. But it's perfect for schoolwork. It gets them online, has a, you know, you can use Google Docs for creating all the schoolwork he needs to. Most schools now are using Chromebooks.
Yeah, okay.
So you're going to save money. If you went out and to get a decent gaming PC, you'd be spending close to $1,000.
Right.
So this way you've got a console and a Chromebook for less than that, and each has its own dedicated purpose.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. Yeah.
And I play Fortnite. Yeah, so there's other things. Now, if he's playing on your phone, that's good because it means he's not tied to a mouse and a keyboard. He's happy to play Fortnite with whatever mom lets him play it on. Console, you don't get a keyboard or mouse. You have to use the controller. I think you can play Fortnite very well with a gaming controller. Lots of people do. Even some of his heroes, like a Ninja, play on Xboxes. So I think he'll be all right. Is he watching Twitch and game streams, and he sees all these people playing gaming PCs? And, yeah.
Yeah, he watches this jelly as it drives me insane.
Yeah. You know, if it's any consolation, Caroline, you are going through what every single mother of a sixth grader in the entire United States is going through.
Yeah.
It's bizarre how this game has swamped the consciousness of 12-year-olds everywhere.
Yeah.
Here's the only thing I would say. It's a great tool for parental coercion. Think of it as a PCD, a parental coercion device. You can play an hour of Fortnite if you do the dishes and empty the trash. You can play an hour of Fortnite if you do 2 hours of homework. You could play an hour, and you control it because it's the Xbox and it's in the living room. It's the only reason I would do that. It is a great way to. I found this out with my kids who are grown now, and it didn't. It doesn't seem to have damaged them, but they've learned, or I've learned. It's good to have something to take away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love the whispers. Every time Big Pee Wee, our musical director, plays this, though, I think, oh, that's Will Smith moving to Miami. I guess he sampled it, but this is the original, the good stuff. That's why we love Big Pee Wee, our musical director, because he has a reverence for the classics. He could dig the originals. Line two, Nathan, New Brunswick, Canada, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Nathan.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do
for
you? I'm great. How are you? How are things in New Brunswick?
I'm doing pretty good. They're pretty good. A little hot today.
What is a little hot?
25 degrees Celsius.
Yikes! That's a little hot.
I don't know what it's like there, but...
I don't know either, but it just sounds hot.
Yeah.
It's actually not that. Warm, it's actually pretty... It's actually pleasant, yeah. What can I do for you?
Yeah. Now, I'm Canadian, so this might be a little different than the States, but I'm thinking about switching from Rogers as a cell phone provider to a provider called Fido. Now, I'm just wondering, I currently still get my Android operating system updates being on the Rogers network.
Right.
I'm wondering if there's a chance that might go away once I switch to Fido.
Yes. So it's complicated, although the good news is Fido is a Rogers MVNO. So in other words, Rogers owns them. But here's why it may affect your updates. And this is only true for Android. For iOS, at least in the States, and I'm pretty sure it's worldwide, Apple has such market clout, they can tell the carriers, nope, we're pushing it out and you're carrying it. But in the Android world, there are three stages to an update. Google has to issue it. Then the phone manufacturer has to certify it. So whoever makes your phone, Samsung, LG, Motorola, gets the updates and then is going to make whatever changes they need to make, because each of them changes Android just a little bit, enough to make it be a problem. If it's Google who makes your phone, if you have a Pixel or one of the Google phones, that eliminates that second step. But then there's the third step. They have to push it out through the carrier. And carriers do not like this because it's bandwidth, right? It costs them some imaginary amount of money. They're going to make you pay for it, but they don't like the burden on their network. So carriers can drag their feet. Sometimes they don't do it at all. And so it's this three-stage thing. Google issues it, the OEM certifies it, and then the carrier pushes it. All three have to happen in sequence for you to get an update. I would guess, because Rogers owns Fido, and Rogers is the dominant carrier in Canada, I would guess you're probably going to get it in a fairly prompt fashion, but I don't know. Thing you might do, what kind of phone is it?
It's the Samsung Galaxy S8.
Yeah. So I do, because I also have a Samsung, I do pay attention to firmware updates on the Samsung. And you'll find if you go to xdadevelopers.com or you even follow it on Reddit, follow your Samsung on Reddit, that the updates go out at different times in different regions and different carriers. It's a very complicated thing. I've actually got a grid, a website grid that I periodically check for the firmware on my S10 and who's got it up to date and who's not. This is at sammobile.com. Oh, wow. I bet they have one actually for your model as well. You want the exact model number. My model number is SMG975UI. Or U1, I guess it is.
Yeah, I've used Sam Mobile before. I didn't know I could use it for this matter. I'll check that out.
Yeah, so
I'll tell you, this makes me think about switching to an iPhone because it's a little frustrating. Eh?
That's what we often say. You know, the iPhones are more secure. I don't know if they're technically more secure, but at least you know you're going to get the update. This is the grid.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the grid for Sam Mobile for the latest firmware for my particular phone. And it's all over the place. You know, it could be, you know, some of them have the May update. Some of them have the April update. Here's Bluegrass Cellular, wherever they are. They're only up to the March update. Same phone.
Oh, wow.
Same manufacturer, different carriers. So that's why I can't say for sure. Check Sam Mobile to see if, you know, Fido updates as fast as Rogers. They ought to, I would think. But maybe because they're a lower cost carrier, they don't. I don't know.
Do you think if I ask the people in the store, do you think they'd give me an honest?
Yeah, get the right guy. If you get a guy who's a nice guy, yeah. He should tell you. Just, you know, say how often are these. Just, you know, he's giving you secret information. So, you know, pull him over to the corner. Say, just off, you know, just between us. How often is this going to be updated? I wish we're in a difficult interregnum right now in Android. Google has, and they announced this at Google I.O. last month, has really made efforts to bypass this whole process. Because what they want to do is put critical system updates in the Play Store so that you can just go get them, update them like any other application. And there's a project they have called Project Treble that has taken parts of the operating system out of the operating system updates that we're talking about and put them into the Play Store. And more that's going to be the case. And that will make a big difference. That will mean that any Android store, Android phone, as long as you have the Google Play Store on it, you know, it's a full Google experience phone, will get updates at the same. They'll all get them at the same time. That will be a big improvement. It's kind of a critical, much needed improvement for Android. So Project Treble has been a great success for Google. And now they announced at Google I.O. that I think it starts with Android Q. The next generation. We're right now at Android P, Android Pi. But the next generation, which will come out in a few months, should, if you get a late model Android phone from any manufacturer on any carrier, get its most critical updates automatically and in a timely fashion. That's a huge improvement. I look forward to that because, well, we need it. And every device. It's not just Android. It's not that Android's worse. iPhones needs updates. Mac needs updates. Windows need updates. You got to get these updates, and you got to get them timely. Brian in Mission Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leo. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. What can I do for you, friend?
You ready for Twit?
Our big news roundtable coming up, and we're having an all-in-studio roundtable. Alex Wilhelm is already here from TechCrunch. Harry McCracken from Fast Company. Yeah, it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, definitely.
Not heard on any of these radio stations. It's a podcast, folks. Go ahead.
Can I ask you two questions?
Yes.
My wife's grandmother's TV, Samsung 55-inch LED, she had it for like 5 years, and the thing went black yesterday.
Oh.
Like dead black, but if I looked really closely, I could barely see an image.
Okay, if it's not a burn-in image, but if it's a live image, that means the backlight died.
Okay.
And once the backlight's dead, it's, I mean, in theory, that's a replaceable part, but you'll find most flat panels, there's no way to fix them. They're like,
okay,
they're like your laptop. It's, you know, these things are all...
Yeah, she paid $400 for it, so it's worth buying a new TV.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, she'll get a much better TV now.
Yes. Okay. I wanted to make sure before I told her to go buy a new one.
Yep. Question two.
This is an Apple rumor question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Everybody, you know, I don't want to buy a new car yet, and I'm kind of stretching it because I feel like most cars nowadays aren't, there's not really a lot that's very exciting in them, you know, technology-wise. And I've heard of some companies that...
Are you gonna ask me when if you should wait for the Apple car?
Well,
because the answer would be no.
No, my question is that of some companies that are starting up that you can use, you can basically connect a cell phone to your car and the camera on the phone sees the road.
Oh. And I don't know of anybody doing that. That's an interesting idea. I don't think there's enough sensors in the phone to help it self-drive. You need many cameras in many angles. Most cases, you also want radar. You don't need LiDAR. Elon's proven that. But, yeah, I don't think your camera, your cell phone will be ready to drive your car anytime soon. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you this week by Capterra. We love the Capterra. Partly because it saves me a lot of trouble. You know, sometimes it happens on the show. You've probably heard it. Somebody will call up and say, yeah, I work for some business. Let's say a veterinarian office. And the boss told me on Monday I have to come in with the best software for a veterinary business. What do you think, Leo? I don't know. What are you asking me for? Or worse, you know, you don't call me, you Google it. So if you call me, I'm going to tell you the real answer, which is go to Capterra.com/tech guy. Capterra is a directory of every business program in existence, everything categorized so you can easily find it. They have 700 categories of software, everything from CMS, email marketing, IT service, SEO, workflow management, and of course, veterinary office management, yoga studio management, any business app you can think of. The best part is not only is the search there and it's going to turn up exactly what you're looking for, you can narrow it down. You can filter it by rating, by how it works, whether it's in the cloud or on your hard drive, how many seats, you know, how many users it can have, all of the stuff that you might, you know, criteria you might have for that software. But then the best thing happens. Capterra has close to 1 million reviews by actual users. There's guaranteed to be many reviews of that particular program you're looking at. You can compare them side by side, search for them, compare them, and then read the reviews. Actual users, there's 1,000 new reviews every single day. Every day. It's a very active marketplace, and it's the best way to figure out. But the best part of all of this is it's completely free. There's no charge. There's no upsell. It's freemium. It's there for you, and man, if you're not using it, you really ought to. If you need business software, Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software for your business. Capterra.com/tech guy. Use that special address. That way they know you heard it on the podcast. Thank you, Capterra, by the way, for supporting the Tech Guy. And thank you for supporting the Tech Guy by supporting Capterra. Capterra.com/tech guy. You're gonna thank me. Go into the boss on Monday morning with some really good ideas. Capterra is software selection simplified. Capterra.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I thank you all for being here. Thanks to our musical director, Big Pee Wee. Thanks to our phone angel, Kim Schaffer. Thanks to you for being here. I love doing this show, and they wouldn't let me do it if you didn't show up. So thank you. I'm eternally grateful. Greg in Apple Valley, California. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Great. Well, actually, could be better if I wasn't calling you. You have a fantastic show.
Thank you.
And I got a problem, and I'm probably the least literate computer guy you've ever talked to on the phone.
But you listen to this show, so you got to be more than a little literate.
I love audio-visual from years ago, and nice. I even used to watch you on that...
The screensavers. So you were an AV geek. Were you in the AV squad?
No. But
you weren't the kid with the came around with the film strips and set them up for the teacher?
No. But I did totally get into the first surround sound stuff.
Oh, you're that kind.
Went through the LCD and plasma TVs. Anyway, I have an old Gateway laptop that's just serviced me fine. I don't even know how to run programs. I get on the internet and spend money on Amazon.
That's all you need. What more do you need?
Exactly. That's what I use a computer for.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was it's about 10 years old, had Windows 7, the first step, and overnight it kept asking me if I wanted to download or change it, whatever the term is, to Windows 10. I kept telling no. About a year and a half ago, it automatically just did it.
Thank your lucky stars. Seriously, thank your lucky stars, because now, because Windows 7 is going to go end of life in January. You weren't going to get updates anymore. You'd have to go to Windows 10 anyway. Now you've already paid. You don't have to pay for it. It's free.
Okay. Well, we got that hurdle done.
Yay.
Now what happened was about 3 weeks ago, the screen just went blank when I turned it on. I had a dark screen with the little wheel spinning, and it was saying diagnosing your PC. So after a couple hours, nothing. I tried it again a couple days. One day I left it on for like 10 hours. Still nothing.
No, it's not. You can turn it off now.
Yeah.
It's not getting better.
It worked. So I bring it to the big box store, and they say, the good news is I can feel your hard disk still spinning. You probably need a new hard disk. It's probably an update, and it can't handle it.
Well, I don't know about that, but it is probably the hard disk. That is almost always when something like this happens, it's the hard disk. How old is the computer?
It's probably 10 years old.
Yeah.
Never had a problem with it.
So now you have a choice.
That's where we're getting to.
It's pretty old. I always think of, you know, they say dog years, a dog ages 7 years to every human's one.
Yeah.
Computer years, I'm thinking 15. So you have a 150-year-old computer.
And the thing is, I'm comfy with it. I have all my bookmarks. I know how it works. It, like, threw me for a loop for at least a week when the new Windows came on. I lost my scrolling ability on the little...
But you know what? If you're happy and it's still working...
It's not now, and that's my question.
Well, but you have to do is spend less than... Not if it worked fast enough for you before it died.
Yeah.
Then I don't think you need a new one, because you can put a new hard drive in there for $100. You can do it yourself. You don't even need the big
box. Well,
box
they're
guys.
Telling me that that's probably the issue in trying to.
Yeah, they don't know, but that's real. A 10-year-old computer. That's the moving part, right? That's been operating for 10 years. That poor hard drive has been spinning and spinning and spinning 5,000 times a minute for the last 10 years.
Right. If I put a new disk in there, your opinion, will I be able to get the computer back to where it was with all my bookmarks, passwords, the way it was previous?
Not unless you back that up. And let me just guess that you haven't.
No.
Yeah.
You're right.
I guess you could, if you wanted to spend the money, ask the guys at the store if they could recover the data on the drive. And 50-50, they could. Because, you know, it may, as this, okay, now I understand why they said good news. I feel it moving. That means that the drive itself is not just like completely dead. If it's still spinning, it can't boot up. The data is probably still on there and may even be easily recoverable. With the right software, they can do it. They'll charge you an hourly fee for it, but it may not be a huge expense. Maybe a couple.
I got like just under $200.
Yeah, that's exactly
what
I...
With the new hard drive installed.
Oh, with the new hard drive. Oh, yeah. Nice. So here's what you say. Say, look, this computer was upgraded to Windows 10, so just put a new SSD. By the way, it's going to cost you a little more, but it's going to make a big difference in performance. You want a solid-state drive, not one of them old spinning drives. You want a modern solid-state drive. Still shouldn't cost more than $100.
Now, is that different from the hard drive?
Yes.
Or is that the same thing?
It's super fast. It's much different.
It's instead of.
It doesn't move. It's just flash memory.
And what is it called again?
SSD, solid-state disk.
Solid-state disk.
Yep.
Okay.
And they'll understand. Say, look, I would like, how much more for an SSD? It doesn't have to be the same size as the old drive. You don't need more than 128 gigs.
Okay.
That should be cheap. That's $50.
Okay.
But they're going to put that in.
Getting a solid state drive.
Say, just ask them. They may say, no, your machine is so old that you can't. I don't know. But it, chances are you can. Say, how much more a solid state drive? I don't want you to restore the disk. What I want you to do is put a solid state drive in there, put Windows 10 on there. It'll activate because you installed it before, so that's good news. You don't have to do anything special. And then put the old disk in a USB enclosure so I can get the data off of it. That means you'll have a second external drive that'll be your old drive. And unless it's seriously damaged, which, again, this is a risk, it may or not be, may or may not be, but you know, chances are it just won't boot. But the data is still there. That means if they put it in a USB enclosure, it would mount, you'd be able to see it, and you'd be able to copy things like your old bookmarks off of it.
Oh, you're the whiz.
Oh, what a whiz of a whiz I am.
And I'm writing that down. I'm grabbing a pen right now. What was the terminology for that?
You just ask them how much for an SSD. I don't need a big one. 128 gigs, 256, that's plenty. Because you don't do anything. That's all you need is for the Windows, the operating system, and any programs.
And what about storing everything?
And then say, what do you think if I got a USB enclosure?
USB enclosure.
To put that old drive in, do you think I'd be able to read it? And they will say, well, that's actually what we were going to do.
Okay.
So say, yeah, well, see, you know what? Do that. See if you can read it. If you can, I'll buy a USB enclosure. Throw that in. And I'll just have that as my backup drive.
Perfect. And that should, from the USB, should be able to be loaded to the new hard drive?
Well, if it's, it depends how much damage it has suffered.
I see. Will they be able to?
They'll know.
Will they know?
Yeah, because what they'll do at the shop is they'll have a little USB connector they can plug that drive into, and they'll plug it into their computer, and they'll see if they can read it. If they can, all your data is there. And in all likelihood, that's what they were saying to you in special coded geek language.
Gotcha.
In all likelihood, that's what will happen. And in which case, yeah, you can just have, you know, your bookmarks, whatever you need, any documents, to the degree that they're not damaged, they'll all be there. And that's good because now you also have an external drive that you can back up stuff to.
So this, you agree that this is more of the disk than the...
I don't know. Because I am...
The processor wouldn't have anything.
I am nowhere near Apple Valley. No, it's not the processor.
Okay, I'm still fine with that.
Yeah, it could be. But it's almost certainly the hard drive. This is the most common way and the most common symptoms for an older computer whose hard drive is
done. Does it sound like it was an update that did this?
Well, they don't know. They're making that part up.
Okay.
We don't know why it died. It died because it's 150 years old, my friend. Hey, I'm out of time. Thank you, Big Pee-wee, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, our phone answerer. Thanks to you for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.